actually, commercially, from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, and on and on and on, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on ye old internet, courtesy of Broadcast.com and, of course, Intel, who together allow you to see me actually do the program as we continue the experiment. Now, I'm going to tell you about a possible confluence or synchronicity of events that was alluded to on this program some time ago, and I'm going to warn you right up front that this may be a bunch of BS. There may be nothing to it. There may even be a hoax involved, because until airtime, I could not confirm part of what I'm about to tell you, all right? I want that understood clearly, that what I'm about to tell you may be in part true, wholly true, or not true at all. I would probably opt for the in part true. Do you recall a guest that I had on the air named Charlie Plyler? Charlie Plyler, for I think a couple of weeks now, maybe a little more than that, has been tracking an object with an apparent Doppler shift. Now, Charlie Plyler is an expert in ELF, especially low frequencies, ultra-low frequency, whatever you want to call it. And this object he's tracking has been apparently decelerating. In other words, according to his frequency center and the difference in the megahertz, the Doppler shift, as he has been measuring it. For example, on August 11th, the speed of the object that he is tracking decelerated. On August 11th, he says it's going 6,651,850 miles an hour. On August 12th, he tracks it at 6,008,123 miles per hour. Now, that's a difference of 643,727 miles per hour. Or put another way, if you want to buy into it, whatever it is would appear to be decelerating. Okay, so that's the first part of this, a little collage of things that I cannot confirm that I'm going to be talking to you about tonight. And then we also have this. And here I'm going to really serve up a warning until I hear otherwise, and I'm going to ask for the audience's help here. Somebody has sent me what purports to be, I want to be really careful here, purports to be an Associated Press article. As yet, I am unable to confirm the authenticity of this so-called Associated Press article. So I'm going to read it to you. It says, Associated Press, 8/17/99, 5:44 p.m., a Dateline, Caldwell, Ohio. Now, this may be a hoax, so bear with me. When a Kennedy Space Center computer programmer thought the sky was falling, he headed for a cave in southeast Ohio. That's right, a Kennedy Space Center computer programmer. Sheriff's deputies, responding to a report of an unfamiliar car, found Lloyd Albright, along with camping equipment, dried food, 16 guns, according to Noble County Sheriff Landon Smith. This is pretty wild stuff, folks. So I'm telling you again, I stop here and I say it may be a hoax. The sheriff there allegedly said, quote, he was very sincere, thought there was a meteor that was going to hit the Atlantic Ocean and cause a tidal wave 200 feet high. And he was trying to hide from this meteor. it was going to go up the coast, take Florida, and sure, there'd be water all over Georgia. The peach trees are going to be covered, he said, with it. Albright was found on the evening, it says, of August 10th. He thought the meteor was going to hit at 4 a.m. the next day and had been in that cave since at least August 8th, Smith said Tuesday. This is, and it goes on. Now, I need some help confirming if this is a legitimate Associated Press news story. Richard Hoagland has this story. It was sent to me as well. But as of yet, I've been unable to confirm this. But when I talked to Richard less than an hour ago, he had received it, and it's as though we were telling each other about it, so it may well be that it was, if it's a hoax, it was sent to Richard and then sent to me. I don't know. But why would a NASA scientist, a computer guy working on the shuttle program, go hide himself in a cave with a bunch of guns and food if it's true? I'm not the only one who has stumbled onto this confluence of events. Stuart Best, who's been a guest on my show, also has stumbled into the same thing. He writes, 1. Turkey video camera crew makes comments about objects spotted during totality. Even shifts camera to get a look. Very difficult to see, but there is something there. Actually, it appears as if there are 3 objects, possibly Comet Lee, with objects in tail, a harbinger for what is coming. Have attached partial article, Shades of Nostradamus. 2, says Stuart Best. NASA computer specialist found hiding in cave, claims meteor shower is going to do great damage, article attached. 3, mysterious deep sky object spotted by scientists. That one's absolutely true, by the way. Repeating, mysterious deep sky object spotted by scientists. No one knows what it is. Says Stewart, things are changing, are they not? Here is an article from the Chicago Tribune, August 17th, entitled, Scientists in Dark About Dot of Light. They call it a dot of light. Every night at their telescopes, astronomers invite the universe to a battle of wits. Surprise us, they say, with some teasing wink of light, some new cryptic clue to something unfamiliar, and better yet, an implied challenge to a cherished theory of some sort. In most cases, astronomers boast we will have it figured out by dawn. Now, astronomers have an unyielding mystery on their hands, something they have observed and pondered for 3 years, a point of light deep in the northern sky that appears to be like nothing ever seen before. It may turn out, they say, to be only a curiosity, an odd variation of a familiar phenomena, or it may be the first evidence of some unsuspected odd object with reverberating theoretical implications. So look, first and foremost, I am unable to yet, as of yet, verify this is a legitimate Associated Press story about the guy in Florida, from Florida. You see, then when you put it together with the Plyler information, the information from Turkey about some objects seen during totality, Shades of Nostradamus, right? To an absolutely legit story about an object scientists, astronomers are looking at that they cannot classify in the northern sky. So, with all of that as set up, Richard C. Hoagland, who won an Engstrom Science Award, Richard C. Hoagland, instrumental in the saving of the Miami Circle, an ancient artifact in Miami. Richard C. Hoagland, now recovered ostensibly from a heart attack, very serious heart attack, is at 7,000 feet in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and in a moment is going to be on the air. And we're going to talk about some of this confluence, some of this synchronicity that's going on between these various stories that I've been talking about tonight. Hey, Richard.
Good morning.
Good morning there.
Actually, it's still, well, yeah, it is morning, yes, yes. I have to now decide which coast I'm on.
Well, you're not on either coast. You're
That's
up
true.
On a mountain 7,000 feet.
In... It's a gorgeous night here. There's a very strong wind blowing. There's a quarter moon. The stars are brilliant and crisp.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to be home. And it's great to be on top of something that I think is going to redefine a number of the discussions we've had over the years. Tonight, I think, is a pretty important night.
Well, I just briefly ran over everything. I must tell you, Richard, this story, this so-called AP story, we can't find in the Associated Press. However, we do have it, of course. We've got a link, and it's a legit story. Paul Harvey had it. Matt Drudge had it. It's been reported throughout the day, but it is not in the AP archive. So something is rotten in Denmark.
Well, as we get through the morning, we're going to see just how rotten, because we have a thing up on our website that Mike and I did tonight in a rush. We literally put some pieces of this puzzle together in the last 2 hours. We put a piece together. We got it up on the website, courtesy of good old Scotty Rowland. Keith is standing by. And there are links to the Jeffersonian, which is a little newspaper in Ohio, in Caldwell, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
in Noble County, where this story first appeared.
Where it happened, yes.
Where it happened. In fact, the reporter for the story was Kevin Macri, M-A-C-R-I.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this really is symptomatic of the age in which we live. You cite the fact that this is not on AP, therefore it probably is a hoax.
Well, I didn't say probably a hoax. I said may well be a hoax.
Okay.
And when you go to the AP archives and you can't find it, you've got to at least put in that caveat, because it's happened to me before, Richard. And so
I understand.
So I began to have Keith, or Scotty, as you call him, begin to research this from email that was coming in, and we started getting all these emails saying, hey, it was on Paul Harvey, hey, it was on Matt Drudge, and I heard it here, and I heard it there, and I heard it on ABC, and blah, blah, blah.
Okay, we were emailed this story a couple, 3 days ago from one of the people who's been very dedicated to kind of our Enterprise family, whose name escapes me, and I'm sure someone will remind me who it is so I can give him proper acknowledgement. He sent it over to Mike Barra. Mike forwarded it on to me. I read it, and I got goosebumps, because
sure.
It's exactly what we have been saying since last fall.
All right, this is a guy. Let's go over the story a little bit. All right.
Let me do one thing, and then we can go back. So what I had Mike do was to actually call the sheriff cited in the story.
Sheriff Smith.
Sheriff Smith. Sheriff. Let me get his name correct here. Landon T. Smith.
That's right. Yes.
Who's been sheriff of Noble County for 23 years.
Yes, sir.
Mike had a very nice long conversation with all kinds of juicy details that we'll get into.
Okay.
He also talked to Kevin Macri, the original story reporter on the Daily Jeffersonian. So the fact that AP doesn't have it, who cares?
Well, you know, I care. And let me tell you why I care. Because I think the AP might have picked it up, and they might have also erased it. Now, I'm not saying they did.
Yep.
I'm just saying that the fact that it is attributed to Associated Press and now is not there is curious.
Well, there's a very interesting parallel with what happened immediately after JFK Jr.'s plane was missing. There was a report on UPI, reported on ABC, because I actually heard it, and on one of the major Boston stations, that Kennedy had called in at 9:39 to the Martha's Vineyard Airport. That story disappeared for several days, maybe a week.
Yeah.
It just reappeared in the UPI archives a few days ago as a bona fide story of Kennedy in complete control of the aircraft seconds before it plunged out of the sky, raising interesting questions in that area. So it's not unprecedented that the wire services will kind of mislay provocative stories for a while until somebody figures out what the spin should be.
Well, so maybe this is
as
mislaid.
As we go through the morning, you're going to see that the spin on this is very serious, very interesting.
All right. Well, I'm up for that. So let's begin talking about it. Now, first of all, you validate it is a true story.
Yep.
The sheriff has been talked to. We have a man here named Mr. Albright, Lloyd Albright, who was found with camping gear, dried food, 16 guns, it says here in the story.
200 pounds of wheat.
Really?
Yeah.
This is a fellow who drove from the Kennedy Space Center to Ohio to hide in a cave. Now, this is not just anybody. This is a space shuttle data processor. And,
Well,
obviously, I mean, why would a man like this, nowhere in this story does it allude to the fact that he's a nutcase at all. That's what I'm looking for. In other words, why would a man pack up everything like that to survive, drive all the way from Florida to Ohio, and be found hiding in a cave?
Well, now, tell him why he drove.
I beg your pardon?
What the story says his reason was.
Well,
what he told the sheriff.
Yeah, he thinks that fragments of Comet Lee, he thought, could hit any time in the next 9 years, within the next 9 years, any time. NASA, of course, comes back saying Comet Lee gets no closer than 77 million miles by the end of September to Earth. But obviously, I mean, the average American, Richard, listening to this story, is going to think, what does this guy know that we don't?
Well, we have had a pattern of NASA computer programmers, computer scientists, engineers on various major projects, on Pathfinder, on Hubble, who have turned up dead. Remember the guy who was found in the little park in Maryland a couple days before Vince Foster?
I do, yes, I
out
do.
Out in
I do.
Yeah. Near Cumberland, Maryland.
Yep.
I used to live in Maryland.
I remember.
For the western end of the state. The state police found him, ostensibly a suicide, in the woods just off the concrete area of the turnoff of the roadside rest.
Yep.
And he worked at the Hubble Space Institute, at the Space Telescope Institute of Hubble down at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, about 100 miles away. The remarkable thing about that, to me, when I got the clipping sent to me by a friend of mine at ABC,
yes,
a few days afterwards, was the incredible synchronicity of a man working for the federal government, choosing to, quote, commit suicide in a roadside rest with a major handgun, a .357 Magnum, a couple days before another employee of the federal government, Vince Foster, commits suicide ostensibly in a roadside rest with the same handgun, or the same kind of handgun, a few miles away. I know there are a lot of suicides per year in the United States. I would like to know the statistics on the number of people who use major caliber hand weapons in a roadside rest to do it within a few miles of each other.
Well, now, I think Vince Foster was found in the park, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, but it's a roadside rest. It's one of those turnoffs off that highway as you go down.
Well, you know, I'm not sure we can connect all this.
No,
the Hubble scientist.
What caught my attention in terms of a pattern. Then a few years later, three years ago, when Pathfinder was about to land on Mars, one of the new computer programmers at the NASA Ames Research Center in California was found dead in Stanford, his body stuffed behind a fence a few hours before the spacecraft ostensibly was going to make it to Mars. And the local investigation by the cops and all that said it was gangs. Well, in fact, the details were a little more interesting, and there were some other officials associated with that project who also died in a very short period of time under circumstances that, frankly, were never satisfactorily addressed. So when I saw this story, when it was forwarded to me as email a couple, 3 days ago, the first thing I said was, here's a guy that did it right. Instead of telling anybody.
Yeah, he just took off, packed up.
He loads up his car, and he goes to... Now, here's where things get really interesting. When Michael talked to Landon Smith, the sheriff...
Michael Barra, you're talking about.
Mike
yes.
Barra, right.
When he talked to the sheriff...
My colleague in...
We're up on a break. When he talked to him, what?
Well, the sheriff's question was, how the heck did he find this cave? He said, I've been here 23 years, and I didn't know the damn thing existed.
Hold on, Richard. All right, so if you want to see this story for yourself, it's in the Columbus Dispatch, and we've got a link to it on our website at www.artbell.com. Make of all this what you will. but stay where you are. I'm Art Bell.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
That's who I am, and I want to caution everybody that the events you're hearing about tonight, although individually appear to be valid, nearly as I can tell, I don't want to unnecessarily worry anybody. I just I want to follow the story wherever it goes, and I hope you'll come along with me without getting freaked out. I've got some information that was sent to me, and apparently sent to Keith as well, about this Lloyd Albright, this fellow who lives in Florida, incidentally. I've even got a phone number for him, which is busy at the moment. This is the shuttle data fellow who drove from Florida, it says, to Ohio, and he was found hiding in a cave. You know, and the implications of that are obvious. If it's an accurate story, it certainly is in a number of newspapers, including the Columbus Dispatch, and we've got that link for you now, so take a look. Nowhere do I see anybody suggesting that that he's in some way disturbed. It doesn't say that, and so you've got to think about what it means. Anyway, we'll get back to Richard Hoagland, and we'll develop this and the rest of the stories that appear to link to it and see if it means anything or maybe nothing at all. Maybe it's just, you know, minds like mine and others putting events together in a way that does not add up. Or does it add up? You decide for yourself. I don't know.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM, from August 18th, 1999.
All right, here we go, and again I warn you, we are stringing together some apparent news stories and events that may or may not add up to anything at all, but, you know, when you hear about this kind of thing, it sure gets your attention. Richard, you're back on again now. So we've got this NASA fellow going all the way to Ohio into a cave.
Yeah, who's not a nut, who works at the Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah.
Who's a computer expert, meaning he can get into the system.
Yep, yep.
He goes from Florida across the Appalachians. He's a smart guy. He loads up his Saturn. He tries to take his family with him, and they won't go. Now, this is where I think we're getting into interesting areas of plausible deniability and cover stories.
Family wouldn't go.
Well, the way I'm reading this is a guy who was sharp enough to realize that when he got caught, he had to give certain stories so the people that he worked with, who he had obviously not told that he was going to do this,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't probably fire him. All right, you don't want to get fired. So I think he took some of his summer vacation to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe this has anything to do with Lee directly. As I've said on your show over and over again, our research, our data, the dots we put together, says that Lee is merely the harbinger, kind of like the sign in the sky.
Yep.
The real problem, the real threat, is in the Beta Torrid stream that the Earth crosses twice a year, the orbit of Comet Encke, in June, July, and in November.
All right, well, I know the Millennium Group thinks Lee, and you think this, but both of you are thinking something. Now,
well, but we can prove, and as it goes through the morning, I'm going to show you the evidence that indicates that we're right. I mean,
all right.
Science is evidence.
Okay, so you're right. We've got
the
scientists.
Here's a guy with NASA, let's get back to this guy, who decides to go to Ohio on the other side of the Appalachians. Now, you, of course, have seen Deep Impact.
Oh, yes.
And you saw that huge tidal wave.
Oh, yes.
A couple years ago, when I published the piece on the bizarreness around the holes in the middle of New York that appeared in Fifth Avenue, a couple days afterwards, the Los Alamos Laboratory, just up the street from me here, published a major study showing what would happen if a medium-sized rock were to fall in the Atlantic Ocean. And it would be devastating, because even a small chunk, something the size of 100 feet or so, if it fell in the Atlantic Ocean, would create a tidal wave, a tsunami, that when it crested on the continental shelf as it raced ashore at between 600 and 1,000 miles per hour, would build a wave between 200 and 1,000 feet high, and would rush inland only to be stopped by the Appalachian Mountains.
Uh-huh.
So this guy is smart. He figures he's got to get beyond the mountains, and he goes to Ohio. Now, the real puzzle here from Michael talking to the sheriff is, how did he find this cave? Because this cave, it says in the story that he found it on the Internet.
Uh-huh.
Well, wrong, because this cave is unknown. Even the sheriff of the county who had grown up there,
didn't know about it.
Had been sheriff for 23 years, he said to Michael, I don't know how he found the damn cave.
Yeah.
And the only reason that they got him was because, and I use that term loosely, he parked his Saturn down at the bottom of the hill and was up in a ravine where this cave is, and this car was visible there with Florida license plates. And this area of the country is a little provincial, and people kind of look out for strangers and people who don't belong. And I guess a sparkling new Saturn with Florida tags kind of caught somebody's attention, and they called the cops.
Right.
They called the sheriff.
Right.
And he finds this guy ready to weather the storm. Well, my hypothesis is that he was basically figuring out how to do this for when it would be serious. I don't think the connection to Lee is real, and I'll tell you why.
All right, but that is, you're specifying a hypothetical. In other words, you're guessing at his motives.
Well, I'm not guessing, because the folks in the Millennium Group actually talked to him, and they talked to Michael earlier tonight.
They talked to
Albright.
They did, huh?
Yes. And the first conversation they had with him, he didn't even know their website existed.
Okay, well, fine. What did Mr. Albright say to them?
That he basically was concerned about this shower.
Why?
In
other words, what did he specifically know that made him do that?
You would have to talk to the Millennium Group. I don't know what that conversation consisted of.
All right.
I do know they're willing to come on the air and talk to you. So if you have their number, you might in the next break or two, give them a call.
I guess I'd short of talking to Albright, which I would love to do. I've got his number here, by the way, Albright's number in Florida, down in Florida. And
well, we might give him a call.
It's busy.
The problem that I see, Art, is that once he got found out,
yeah,
we're looking at a series of cover stories to basically keep his job and to keep, walking around.
Well, I don't blame him for that.
If he has stumbled on a real set of data buried in some computer somewhere,
right,
and acted upon it, and I think in the next segment we're going to get to what I think was the trigger, which is the NASA video from the eclipse.
Yeah, let's get to that now. Look, everybody's rumors are rife on the Internet that during the eclipse, there was something. Okay, well, I'm going to let you jump into that part of it. I've heard the rumors that during The eclipse in Turkey. Objects were seen that cannot be accounted for. What do you know?
Okay. Before the eclipse, the last of the millennium, August 11th, last Wednesday, 1999.
Right.
There was a tremendous amount of discussion and, you know, soap opera going on around the internet on what this all portended. What would we see? Would, you know, Nostradamus's,
yes,
you know, Lord of Terror be visible?
Yes.
What would happen to Comet Lee, et cetera, et cetera?
The King of Terror, they call
King
it.
King of Terror,
that's
yeah.
Right.
So, obviously, there were some people looking, and the Millennium Group was looking along with the rest of us.
Yeah.
And what they did was to download, apparently, the QuickTime movie that the NASA feed from the ship just north of Ankara, Turkey, in the Baltic, was feeding. Or that was a land site. That was actually in Ankara, and there was a basically television camera digitized feeding to the web the eclipse as it happened. It was a live event. What was very curious, and everybody who, you know, watched this live would have seen this. The cameraman, as the eclipse is about to become total, as the moon is sliding over the sun, you know, just covering it, and you get what's called the diamond ring effect.
Right.
Which is that last bright speck of the photosphere that disappears behind the edge of the moon. Notices something at about the 2 o'clock position. And the reason he does is, but if you're looking through the kind of little monitor that's attached to TV cameras,
right,
they are typically over-scanning. They're seeing more of the field of view than is being broadcast. So what's very interesting is the cameraman begins to move his camera and zoom in on this collection of three bright objects at the 2 o'clock position, about one diameter of the sun, away from the sun, up in the upper right-hand corner of the screen.
Now, are these objects actually, do you think, Richard, or artifacts? There's a big difference.
Well, they're not reflections, they're not the lens flare, they're nothing like that, because, for one thing, as the eclipse gets dark, they're still there, and they move synchronously. In other words, when the cameras move back and forth and up and down,
yes,
they move as a group.
Okay.
And if you look at lens flares, you'll
right.
see that it changes
obviously,
geometrically.
Obviously, they certainly would if they were
nope.
lens flares.
Nope.
Right, now, let me stop you for 1 second, Richard. I'm downloading about 400 messages, email messages right now, so that's going to take a while. But I've got the following message by fax, Richard, from Hawaii. It says, Art, I just sent you an email regarding one additional anomaly present on the eclipse shots that has had little or no coverage at all. I attached a JPEG that I downloaded from CNN and have placed a white square around the anomaly. It is also present on the QuickTime movie that Richard is going to talk about tonight. I sent an urgent email to both your accounts, signed Ken in Hawaii. Ken, would you please send that also to my webmaster at webmaster@artbell.com. Go ahead, Richard.
Well, this is what I'm going to get to, because the Millennium Group used the NASA feed exclusively to analyze.
Right.
The neat thing about this is NASA didn't own the eclipse. They had a camera. But there were literally thousands of other cameras photographing this from all the networks, the
yep.
BBC,
yep, yep, yep.
CNN, et cetera,
everybody.
Plus all the private. We have folks who are in Cornwall with digital video.
Right.
On every one of these shots, if there are real objects beyond the sun, in orbit, in space, that are cometary, that look like a comet,
yes,
they will be recorded on thousands, if not tens of thousands, of individual videos and frames.
So do we know that to be true?
You just got a guy who just emailed you from Hawaii.
Yeah, you're right. Here is one. Okay.
Now, what we're asking in the piece we posted tonight on the web, on the Enterprise website, linked through yours, is that anybody else who has video and or JPEGs or TIFF files or whatever of the eclipse, please send us those images. Because we can, with a little image processing, reach down into the noise,
mm-hmm.
because the exposures were obviously optimized for the eclipse. They weren't optimized for a cometary set of objects.
That's correct. And so when there was any light at all, it would have almost, no doubt, obscured whatever was there.
Well, if, for instance, on the NASA thing, you see there's what's called an AGC circuit in operation. So when you get the diamond ring, the circuit loses sensitivity, and you lose the object.
Yeah, actually, I was I watched the entire thing, country by country, on the, what channel was it? The one cable channel, a satellite channel that I watched. And the BBC was covering it on Discovery. That's it. Discovery carried it country by country.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see, when they showed the shot from Turkey, I didn't see it. But, you know, they just had that on a monitor in the background as they were discussing the totality as it was passing over various countries. But then I get this flood and flood and flood of email about objects sighted during the Turkish...
Because they're dim. You know, they're not going to be like brilliant headlights.
The Turkish film, I think, was the clearest.
Right. Well, that's because it was optimized. In fact, the cameraman either caught his attention or he knew to go to it. Because he zooms in on these objects, all right? It's kind of like looking at the video, STS-48 and STS-80.
Uh-huh.
The cameraman knows or something. Remember the shot over Chile? The object?
I will never forget it,
it's
ever.
It's the same thing. The cameraman knew what he was going for. Now, what's bizarre in the QuickTime movie, which is available, is that this has all been edited out.
What?
It's gone.
You mean in the movie you have, it's gone?
In the NASA QuickTime movie.
Oh, the NASA QuickTime movie. But what about the one you have on your website?
We have linked to the stills that the Millennium Group captured during the actual event. Now, what we're doing is we're calling for others who have video, including our own folks who have not returned back from England yet.
I'm going to net myself here. So, in other words, I would have to go over to your site and then link to the Millennium Group site.
Well, you can go to the Millennium Group site directly, but what we've got is a whole story where we put together our work over the last year tracking the Enki problem, which is what this really is. Because when I looked at this stuff a couple days ago and I saw the Millennium Group identifying it with Comet Lee, I said, no, of course not, can't be. It's in the wrong place. So I went back. Remember the discussion we had about Comet Lee a couple, 3 weeks ago?
Yes.
I went back to the maps that I had pulled down from the JPL site, and I measured. You know, science is measuring.
Yes.
I measure the position angle and the distance of the mystery objects from the center of the sun, which is about half a degree,
right,
about one solar diameter. And then I measured on the map, on the celestial globe, the position of Comet Lee based on projections made before it was rounding the sun. And it's a good 20 degrees, I don't want to say 19.5, but actually it's closer to that, away in the upper right-hand direction. In other words, it's a good 40 times farther away from the sun than these objects are in terms of optical diameter.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the images now. In fact, if you go to our website, folks, one of the links that you're going to see right away under Richard's name is... At the bottom it says, something anomalous seen during solar eclipse on a related page. And you'll see a bunch of JPEG things up there. Here's another related page that Keith has up called Something Wicked. I'm going to have to go take a look at that.
Something Wicked This Way Comes. That's my headline for the story tonight we put up on this. This is the object we've been talking about since last fall.
Its headline says, "Turret object spotted during solar eclipse. Is this the big one?" Question mark.
All right, let me tell you just before the break here, let me tell you the bottom line.
Okay.
When I asked Mike tonight, I said, good God, I said, plot with redshift the orbit of Comet Enki. Remember, the Beta Torrid stream is really a bunch of other junk in the same orbit as Comet Enki. Enki is the visible thing everybody talks about that orbits the sun every 3.3 years, but we cross the stream like crossing a freeway twice a year. We cross its orbit. Graham Hancock and Victor Klub and a whole bunch of others have been talking now for many years about objects that are in this stream, invisible, that one day we might run into. And we've been tracking through the NASA symbology potentials for this kind of object, missing only the piece of data which says, we found it.
All right, Richard.
So I asked Michael to look at the plot of Enki's orbit, and lo and behold, the sun, during the eclipse, is sitting right on top of Enki's orbit, and those objects that you're seeing in that video are in Enki's orbit.
All right, hold it right there. That's actually already more than enough for me to be digesting. Something Wicked This Way Comes. I guess you better go up to my website and take a look-see. at www.artbell.com. And we're not done with the synchronicities, if you wish to call them that, yet. There's more to come. I warn you, assimilate this as an adult. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18, 1999.
Well, nobody can say I'm not trying. With regard to Mr. Aldrich, the NASA computer guy who went to Ohio to a cave, in this story that we have now verified as being at least a real story, I'm talked to Mike Barra a few moments ago, who gave me the number for Gary Goodwin of the Millennium Group, who actually talked to the man in Florida, and I could have had that story had Gary been up, but Gary is not up, did not answer the phone. So I'm that close, and I'm trying to do all the verification of this I can, and I sure would like to talk to that man myself and see what motivated him to do something that drastic. And then we'll get back to this Turkish business in a moment. We've got photographs. My email is downloading and downloading and downloading, and we'll see what I've got. But something perhaps wicked comes this way. I don't know. That's the headline on Richard Hoagland's site right now. We'll get back to Richard in a moment.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Well, all right. Lots happening tonight, obviously. And as I said, coming out of the last hour, please use your own discretion. Please use your own discretion in assimilating this information. I mean, I realize it's freaky and it's scary, but it may or may not all fit together. I'm very loath, very cautiously come to any sort of conclusions about something wicked this way coming. But you've got to admit, this is some strange, strange stuff.
You say that, you have that evil laugh.
Richard, did you say evil laugh?
I said every time you say that, you have that evil laugh. Well, the bad news is, I think we found it. The good news is, we can do something about it.
Like what?
Go back to the two NASA videos. Look at those spacecraft. They're not the shuttle. They're not stupid primitive rockets. They're something from the 21st century, if not beyond, which is under control of this government, and all they have to do is use it to change this. Depending upon how much time we have and how much depth you want to go into, I'm going to present some evidence tonight that there are a bunch of folks that have been told to do nothing. And I think that's unconscionable. That's why we've been tracking this and chasing it so vigorously for the last year, and that's, I think, why we've had such enormous things thrown at us, and why you have had enormous things thrown at you. Do you realize this is the only clarion voice of reason and science and real questioning that's out there?
Well,
I said earlier tonight this story is not on AP. Why isn't it on AP when a NASA guy...
Well, all right, here's one. There's several possibilities here, Richard. One is the Associated Press. I've been in broadcasting a long time, so I know. The Associated Press has state wires.
Yep.
And maybe it ran on the Associated Press state wire in Ohio.
Then how did Harvey get hold of it?
Well, I don't know how Paul Harvey got it. Bear with me now. Maybe the National Associated Press chose not to pick up the story, which I consider to be totally bizarre, because it's something they should be jumping on, and or another possibility is they did pick up the story and dropped it. Now, and or that it may still yet show up. I don't know any of the above. It could be true.
Well, let's get back to the substance, okay? Let me explain a couple things for people who are not on the Internet. And most of your listeners are, and unfortunately do not have access to computers, so they really need us to paint word pictures. So let me try to paint a word picture here. When you stand on the Earth and you look into space, you're looking essentially at a two-dimensional sphere, left, right, up, and down. All of the 3D stuff is going on out there, you know, us orbiting the sun, planets orbiting around us, the moon orbiting the Earth, that kind of thing, all resolved down to movements on apparently a two-dimensional sphere. It's called the celestial sphere. And what we see if we project orbits that are really three-dimensional, they turn into two-dimensional lines somewhere across that sphere. And the Earth's orbit itself is a line with the sun moving like a bead once around the whole sky every year. So when you project out the orbits of things like Comet Lee or Encke's Comet or the Beta Torrid Stream, you basically wind up with a map, such as we have on our website, which has, you know, things representing the sun or the moon or planets, and then you have these lines connecting them. Those are the orbits. Those are the orbit tracks projected against 3D space, and they look two-dimensional. What is astonishing here is that these objects seen on the NASA video from Ankara, Turkey, are exactly on the orbit plot of Encke for this moment in time, which was noon on August 11th from Ankara, Turkey, looking up at the sun and the stars behind it, projected on a computer plot.
All right. Now, the Millennium Group is thinking this has something to do with Comet Lee.
That's right.
And
Comet Lee is a good 20 degrees further away.
So you're in disagreement with them, and you
Total
believe...
Total disagreement.
Yes, okay, that's fine.
Because they are claiming that... They've been claiming from the beginning that something weird was going to happen with Comet Lee. What I have said is that since NASA is dealing with all of this so symbolically... Comet Lee was a symbol. It's kind of like John the Baptist. Before.
Yeah, but the Millennium Group's theory, Richard, was that Comet Lee would cause a large possible CME on the sun as it passed closest.
Yeah.
That was their theory.
And there was also a potential for a change of orbit caused by a solar interaction with cometary material. This depends on one of their group is a guy who's got a separate independent model of what comets are, which is at variance with what our model is, which is basically Tom Van Flandern's model, that they're pieces of a planet that blew up, you know, 65 million years ago.
Yep.
Which I hope it will, because what I want to do is to get to more people like Lloyd Albright. If there's one Lloyd Albright in the agency, remember, we've always talked about the honest guys versus the small clique that was sitting on this information. Albright strikes me as an honest guy who tripped over something and did what any human being would do. He tried to use it to save himself and his family.
Of course.
Now, he obviously is now going to be in a very difficult position because he's given himself away when the sheriff arrested him and made him a national story, except for the AP. He suddenly has a real problem because he goes back to work at NASA, and what might happen to Mr. Albright if, in fact, he's not a kook, not a nut, but tripped over something serious somewhere in the labyrinth of NASA computers?
Well, you know, usually when they run this kind of story, they add something, you know, that the person seemed delusional or out of touch or some little tagline like that that is not in this story.
What's interesting, when Michael talked to the sheriff this morning, the sheriff said that, you know, he spent a couple nights there in the jail and he woke up and he said he felt much better. And the sheriff thought he was, sane enough and responsible enough to release him. In fact, they gave him a police escort to the freeway with his Saturn loaded with his 200 pounds of weed and the guns and the other stuff. Can you imagine? The man has 16 guns in a car, and the sheriff lets him go?
Well, it's legal to have guns.
The point, in this society where everybody now is trigger happy and everybody is wondering what are people doing?
Yeah, of course it is suspicious, but I mean it's legal.
But here's what's important.
If you own him.
The sheriff took the measure of the man, believed him when he said this is what he was doing. I mean, they found him in the cave trying to boil eggs in a very smoky environment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of those Y2K scenarios where city slicker tries to suddenly rough it and go to ground to do things he's never had to do.
Right.
I mean, I can just feel for this guy because I believe he tripped over something.
Something,
yeah. It's a rational thing. Now, what I want to know is how did he find the cave? What was his source of information about this little cave that even the sheriff didn't know about?
Who knows?
Safely on the other side of the Appalachians.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is to appeal to other Albrights out there, because what is incredibly interesting in the timing is that Mr. Albright went on his odyssey right after the eclipse. In other words, he's there at the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
He's watching the NASA feed.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
He sees this object, or folks around him who are more privy to what's going on than he is see these objects. It's a confirmation. And he acts on that information and does what he did.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get other people to come forward and to own up to what NASA has known for some time, apparently, this small group that's sitting on this information.
Maybe.
Well, that's the model. Now, remember, I've been on your show for the last year saying this was going to happen. We would have evidence at some point. Well, this is strictly orbital data. Those photos from NASA are not the only source of information. Every video taken, every still taken of the eclipse will show these objects. There are thousands, tens of thousands of sources of information. All people have to do is send it to you or send it to me, and we can put it together as an absolutely untouched data stream confirming what's there. Now, the coincidence of having objects appear next to the sun, right in the orbital path of Comet Encke, which, of course, that path is beyond the sun at this point in the year, is pretty weird. How many times, Art, have you driven down a country road and you've seen a train coming? Or you've been paralleling the train?
Lots and lots of times.
Okay. Now, there are folks that when they see that situation, they gun the engine and they try to race the train to the crossing. And sometimes they make it. And sometimes they don't, right?
Well, the people who just barely make it and then go across the track, those are idiots.
Of course.
And they usually get killed.
Of course. But
if I made it safely way ahead of time and the little arms had not come down yet, you bet I'd go across.
Okay, but here's what I'm setting up. What we're seeing in this video is analogous to seeing a train. And we're moving, and it's moving toward the crossing.
Uh-huh.
The crossing is November 5th. The 15th of this year. Now, just eyeballing it, I haven't had time because this literally erupted. You know, we all came together in the last couple, 3 hours, so I haven't had time to sit down to do the numbers.
To see if there's a problem at the crossing.
But, exactly, but just eyeballing it from where it is, where we are, the orbital geometry and all that.
Yep.
It's like looking at that train and wondering, can you make the crossing? And it's telling me, just looking at this data visually, that train, those comets, and Earth are going to meet at the crossing in November.
All right, may I ask another question, please?
Anything.
This now goes to Charlie Plyler's information, which has been circulating. You and I have seen it on the Internet now for a couple of weeks. And
mm-hmm.
He is tracking something, he believes, that would appear to have a Doppler shift showing a deceleration. Now, a deceleration of about 600,000 miles an hour from one day to the next.
Okay, let's back up. Let's lay out Charlie's model.
Yeah,
Charlie
okay.
is listening in the ultra-low frequency regime.
Correct.
Which is radio signals that are typically 1 or 2 hertz, 1 or 2 cycles per second.
Usually down, he's listening for things that are in the Earth.
Well, that's exactly. His sensors are buried in the Earth.
Yeah.
But in essence, he's using the Earth as an antenna. Because if there's a powerful source in space, it will resonate with the Earth, which is a big antenna at those frequencies, and so he picks up a sympathetic resonance vibration. Follow?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, for
yes.
people who are not electronic like you are, I'm being, you know, I'm
yes,
trying to lay it
you.
Out here.
I appreciate that.
So his model, which he developed many, many months ago when he started hearing these strange low-frequency signals that are very powerful, changing slowly in frequency. They're not constant. They're changing. He developed a model with a couple other guys. I forget who their names are. But the model was that what he was picking up was really signals from something in deep space, meaning a few million miles out from the Earth, and the change of frequency was somehow related to the distance of the object from the Earth.
Right.
That's his model.
Okay.
The problem is he's got no data to stick in the model. There are no examples of a known object moving past the Earth that I'm aware of. Now, maybe Charlie has got this data and I haven't seen it, but what we need to test his model is a real object moving past the Earth, and then we correlate the signals he's hearing
with that.
With that.
So this is pretty far out.
It's not far out. It's just untested. It's a pretty neat idea, actually. I think Charlie deserves a high marks for thinking of this, but it's got to be tested. So for the last couple, 3 days, maybe a week or so, he's been hearing, or actually picking up electronically, a set of signals that are moving down in frequency that he interprets in his model.
To be Doppler shift.
To be a Doppler shift from an object approaching that's decelerating.
Alrighty. So if the interpretation that he's giving to it is accurate, then the Doppler shift would indicate a deceleration of the sort that I just described.
Right. Now, let me start with decelerations. The difference between natural objects and artificial objects is artificial objects can decelerate and accelerate, and natural objects don't. They are in orbits. They are in Newtonian trajectory orbits. That's how we can do these orbit
points. And they are at constant speed.
At relatively constant speed. Depending upon if it's an ellipse, you'll get a change of velocity, but that's pretty... It has to be a pretty significant ellipse, departure from a circle, for you to get that kind of change.
Not this kind of change.
No. Now, let me really blow your mind and tell you what I think Charlie might be picking up.
All right.
We know from the NASA videos that there's guys up there that are running around in really exotic space vehicles that can do all kinds of neat stuff.
We've seen it. Sure.
They're not shuttles. They are based on what's called electrogravitic technology, meaning it's electrical in nature, and it controls gravity, inertia. It can move through the vacuum without pushing something out the back, without a rocket exhaust.
Yes.
It's the ultimate, you know, it's not warp drive, but it's pretty close to it. I believe that what Charlie's picking up is the side effect, electronic signature, of the engines of these things. And they're big. Think of the thing that flew over Phoenix, 2 miles across. Think how massive and how big an engine or set of engines you would need to power a thing like that.
You'd need a lot of power.
You'd need a lot of power.
Used perhaps in ways that we don't yet understand.
And it would resonate at the lower frequencies because that's where the power is. Remember, power is always in low frequencies. So I think Charlie is not picking up natural objects. I think he's picking up the signatures of ships. All right, I can say that word now, polite society, because we got the damn videos, all right? We have seen stuff doing things that nothing should be doing, and I think that's what he is picking up. Now, how does it all correlate? Well, the synchronicity you mentioned earlier in the show tonight, I believe, is somebody's testing something because they're getting ready for November, or they're observing, or they may not even be ours. Remember, if we have ruins around the solar system that I've been looking at now with my colleagues for 15 years, and if those ruins were built either by humans or by non-humans...
There's someone out there.
There's someone out there, and this is a critical time.
All right, fascinating. God. All right, Richard, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and again, we are stringing together material that we believe to be accurate. You decide for yourself. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999.
Stay alive without your love. Oh, baby, don't leave me this way. No, I can't exist. I'll surely miss your tender kiss. Don't leave me this way.
Premier Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999.
Let me tell you what we have. We have a number of stories indicating that a man named Lloyd Albright, a NASA scientist or a computer fellow at Kennedy, left his home in Florida and went to Ohio, where he was found in a cave. And we've been confirming the story, indeed have confirmed it. I've even got an AP confirmation now that we'll try and get a link to as soon as I can talk to Keith. In the meantime, you're not going to believe this. And I'm not sure I do, but I tend to because somebody sent me the private number. I think that I've got Lloyd Albright on the phone. I'm not sure. Where are you in Florida?
Central East Coast.
Central East Coast. And you are?
I work as a subcontractor with NASA.
As a subcontractor?
Mm-hmm.
You do, it said in the story that you do some sort of computer work for them.
Utility software.
Utility software, yeah. For the shuttle program?
Low-level software, just basically data conversion and reporting.
Data conversion and reporting.
Correct.
All right. We, Lloyd, have been reading a story about you that appeared actually in a number of newspapers and even apparently in the Associated Press at some level, that you went to Ohio with your car and you were found in a cave.
Well, I wasn't really inside the cave. Basically, I was outside of the cave. Basically, I'm going through a bit of marriage stress and...
Marriage stress.
Yes, marital stress. I'm probably facing a divorce right now.
I'm sorry to hear that, Lloyd. Why? I guess everybody wants to know why you would have so many guns and so much.
It was just I was kind of like distraught, if you might say, over the possibility of divorce.
Yes.
Because I've been married 23 years.
Sure.
2.5 years courting. And the thought of facing real divorce was somehow almost unhinging. And instead of, like, facing the stress of that, I projected it onto this comet idea and just used that, or just my mind latched onto the idea as a reason to leave.
So the mental stress of your divorce was somehow... converted to the stories you've been hearing.
The comet idea.
The obvious question everybody has, Lloyd, is: did you have any information as a subcontractor for NASA?
No, absolutely not.
That caused you to make this move.
No. What happened exactly was, I happened to belong to a group that dabbles with psychic stuff. Unfortunately, I made a grievous error. And that I happened to be awake at the same time as a lady in Ohio. And we both, like, tried to read for each other and came up with completely bogus but information that motivated me to go up there.
Really? Do you understand why people are concerned about the story?
They think I might have secret information or whatever, on and on and on.
Exactly.
Well, if you look at the hierarchy of NASA, they divide up the work geographically. And that while I have access to some data, I definitely have no access to planetary trajectory or visual or other data except over the web. And that's the same that everybody has.
All right. Lloyd, look, I know you're in trauma. You're up in the middle of the night. I suppose your phone's been ringing all day long, huh?
Well, actually, I haven't been here.
How
long? We even had the news crews out here.
They had news crews there?
Yeah, interviewing my neighbors. What do you know about them?
And so how long ago did you get home?
Let's see, Friday.
Friday?
Yeah, a week ago.
So then what have you been doing all that time? Have you been back?
Going to work.
You've been back at work?
Yeah.
Trying to work. You work at home?
It's no, no, I go to work and then I go home. No problem.
You go to work and go home?
Yep, nothing else.
Absolutely remarkable. Well, listen, I really, really want to thank you, Lloyd, for coming
out
here.
I respect your radio program and have enjoyed it monthly.
All right, good night and get some sleep, Lloyd.
Good night. Will do.
Thank you. That was Lloyd Albright. Now, how do I know that's the right number? Well, my board operator in Oregon got me the number. A man conferenced. Then I asked for the direct number. I have a secondary fax here, which found his phone number listed. Let me see. Listed in something called switchboard.com with an address of Satellite Beach, Florida, and the phone numbers matched. And so I think that really was the real Mr. Albright. What you make of his story now is entirely up to you. Richard?
I'm listening. To me, this man sounded very confused.
I agree.
And he was...
Tired, no doubt, tired and...
He completely digressed the conversation into the Cassini... You know, situation.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Has nothing to do with comets.
I know.
But
I do have reason to believe that was a real Mr. Albright.
Okay. Well, put yourself in his position. He somehow was motivated to leave home, leave his family,
yep,
leave the love of his life, you know, according to what he just said.
None of that in the story, by the way.
No, none of that.
And you certainly would think the sheriff would have passed on to the news media a tagline that he was having, you know, domestic difficulties or some little tagline that they would put on a story like this.
Yes, and you didn't ask him how he found the cave, you know, which the sheriff himself didn't know existed there. And what I'm hearing tonight is what I would expect from someone who has to go back to work and live with you know, whatever he's got to live with and is frankly wanting to get rid of this as fast as possible. Not, you know, Mr. Albright, mental condition notwithstanding, we still have the data on the NASA feed from Turkey. We still have objects in the Encke orbit.
Right.
And the projected model of racing the train to the crossing, we and they are going to meet very close in November. And I am suspicious, as I have been for a year, because there's too much going on here to be fobbed off with marital difficulties. You don't leave and travel four states away and load your car full of everything to survive the end of the world because of marital difficulties.
I would think that would have made it into the story, Richard, wouldn't you?
I would think so. I mean, Michael had a very extensive discussion with the sheriff this morning, and what I am impressed with is that they turned this man loose with all those guns.
All right. Look, we've got so much breaking all around us right now. Let me bring on somebody else, Richard. Here's Charlie Plyler. I've got Charlie on the line. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Art. How are you?
Well, a little confused at
Hi,
all.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
It's Richard Hoagland.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Pretty good.
All right, Charlie. Richard and myself, I've been reading what you've been posting on the Internet now for some time, some number of days, about something that you think you're tracking, or I guess you certainly are tracking. Charlie, tell us the story. Would you please? You're a researcher into ultra-low frequency radio, and what do you think you've discovered, please?
I would really like to know, Art. I noticed a peak in the frequency spectrum, extremely low, several weeks ago, and which in itself is not unusual. There's a lot of signals going through the Earth. But this peak has started increasing in frequency on a day-to-day basis. And, out of curiosity.
What is the frequency, Charlie?
It started out, right now it is 0.045 hertz, which is extremely, extremely low.
A little less.
That would equate to a wavelength of approximately 4,232,995. Those figures may not be exactly right, but pretty close to a little over 4 million miles.
Close enough.
Yeah.
4 million miles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Art, just for the sake of comparison, the Encke orbit that
yes.
we're seeing, if these objects by the sun, the NASA photograph,
yes.
are in Comet Encke's orbit, the Beta Taurid orbit. They are at a minimum of about 190 million miles away from us because they're on the other side of the sun beyond Earth's orbit at this geometry. So whatever Charlie is picking up and what we're seeing in the video have to be two totally separate things.
Charlie, why do you think that what you're picking up is coming from outside the Earth versus inside the Earth?
I would guess the biggest reason, I keep up also with the magnetic field changes
right.
of the Earth.
Right.
And this is in the spectrum of various minute changes in the magnetic field that causes extremely low frequency wavelengths.
Right.
And I picked this up during this particular time that I was looking at anomalies caused by solar burst, X-ray radiation, things like that.
But
I really have no way of telling where it's coming from.
Charlie?
Yes.
These are not correlated with any events going on the sun, though.
No, not at all.
Exactly.
It's a steady burst, but the unusual aspect is the strongest when the sun is directly overhead. That in itself, you would think that it would be connected with the sun.
That's interesting.
And it peaks around noontime.
Or something in line with the
sun.
Exactly. That was my thought.
Okay. So it peaks with the sun. It's at 0.045 hertz. And how strong is the signal?
Above the noise level, about 150 millivolts. High enough above the noise level, so it's very distinct.
Oh, isn't that interesting? 50 millivolts, that's a pretty big signal.
Of course, that's relative. That's relative with the amplification equipment I'm using.
Yep. Well, now other people can listen as well. Anyway, in an email that I saw, Charlie, you had postulated that if your model is correct, as Richard would put it, if this is a Doppler shift you're observing, then between the, I think it was the 11th and the 12th, is that right? The 11th and the 12th? Yes. The object would have decelerated in excess of 600,000 miles per hour. Is that accurate?
Those are not my figures. I couldn't tell you right off the top of my head.
So somebody took what you did in terms of what you thought might be Doppler shift.
That's correct.
And projected that.
I believe so,
change.
Yes.
Charlie, let me try to get something straight here. You're saying that this low frequency is, or ultra low frequency, is like a standing wave, and the frequency is related to the wavelength, which is how you derive the distance to
Correct.
The hypothetical object in your model, right?
Correct.
And when the frequency changes, you interpret that as a change of distance, changing the standing wave to a new distance. Right?
Right. For instance, August the 11th, the frequency was 0.028 hertz.
Uh-huh.
That equates to a wavelength of 6,651,000 miles.
So this is not a direct Doppler. This is a derived calculated distance change.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
So someone has done the calculation, taken those frequencies, translated them into a standing wave distance.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Like singing in the shower.
Yeah, I see.
Yes. Another thing, the distances are relative. Now, this is the wavelength of the signal itself.
Uh-huh.
August 12th, 13th, 14th, this wavelength is getting shorter with a correspondingly increase in frequency.
Charlie, are you hearing the signal when the sun is down other side of the Earth?
It's very, very low. It's in the noise level. You can't pick it up.
Now, let me ask you this, Charlie. Does this thing move in continuous frequency change, or does it jump?
It will jump slightly. It isn't exactly correct. Other influences may change it.
Uh-huh.
Why are you going, uh-huh? What does that mean, Richard?
Because that fits the model of a ship. I mean, I don't know whether, Charlie, you were listening earlier, but I've been thinking for months, ever since I stumbled across this stuff way back last fall when you were looking at these ultra-low signals, that we're not looking at natural objects. We're looking at the engine noise, the electronic interference, you know, the kind of ignition noise, only in the very low frequency regime, of big, powerful electrogravitic engines that would be needed to move a big mass in space from one point to another without rockets. And we see NASA video of this stuff. We've got two sets of video of things that do this, and they move discontinuously. They appear to appear and then disappear, which would indicate that they can jump across a reasonable amount of space, which would result in, if you're looking at a standing wave model, you know, resonating the ionosphere and the magnetosphere of the Earth, that you were getting a discontinuous distance change, not a natural object.
Charlie, I forget, where are you located?
In North Carolina.
Oh, my God, I woke you up in the middle of the night.
No, as a matter of fact, I was just getting ready to take a trip to Georgia, and I happened to check my email.
Oh, and that's why you called me. Yes, I sent that email just before the show tonight.
Oh.
Because your story is sort of one of several that are interesting and confusing at the same time that seem to be very synchronous in... Are you aware, Charlie, of what they saw when the sun, the moon went in front of the sun in totality in Turkey?
Yes, I am. I've been following back quite closely, quite curious also.
What do you think of the quality of the video, Charlie? Have you seen any other sources than the NASA feed?
Not too good.
Meaning not too...
I believe it could be better. Of course, with the... I have no idea of the type of equipment they were using, but I wouldn't have thought that the video could have been a little bit sharper and clearer.
Interesting.
Well, as you pointed out, though, Richard, they have automatic gain controls, and when the sun begins to even peek out a little bit and they get that diamond effect, you can see the camera going into immediate shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Richard, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
I've noticed yesterday's data, after I compiled it, this wavelength is, as far as the proportion of the time and the distance, it seems to be slowing down. As a matter of fact, as of yesterday, at 0.04 hertz, the distance had actually increased from the Earth about 150,000 miles.
Well, that's interesting.
Which is I'm
not sure if you have anything on that yet or not.
Well, I mean, my model here is you're not picking up a resonance with a natural object. You're picking up engine noise of a big, massive electrogravitic system driving a big vehicle.
But that's a speculative model.
Well, of course. But in the natural model, you know, things just don't hop around. And they certainly don't decrease and then increase by 100. That's halfway from here to the moon.
No, that's true. They don't do that.
Now, let me put another piece of data on the table. The Millennium Group has been doing a really good job of monitoring the SOHO data, and they have been tracking funny-looking things that appear in the images SOHO is taking of the sun during those artificial eclipses.
Yes, sir.
Their proposal is there's a new natural member of the solar system, which I think is not correct. But if somebody's trying to get our attention... hovering around kind of in the field of view of SOHO?
Yes.
I projected that something a few million miles further toward the sun, but nowhere near close to the sun, which is 93 million miles away, would fit the bill.
Something's out there. All right, look, we're at the top of the hour. Charlie, I really want to thank you for calling in. I've got your number. You're going away to Georgia. When are you going to be back?
It's a quick trip. It'll be this afternoon sometime.
Oh, excellent. All right.
Charlie, do you archive your data by date?
Yes, I do.
Is it pretty consistent? And
it is very consistent, except for the various anomalies caused by natural events.
Charlie, we'll try and get a link up to your website so people can take a look. I'm out of time. So,
okay.
Charlie, let's stay. Thank you so much for coming on. All right?
Thank you.
Good night, Charlie.
All right. Good night, Charlie. And a couple of things near it there. I see trouble on the way. We will be right back, I think.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Don't go around tonight. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Well, if you think it's been weird up until now, just wait till you hear what's coming. My mama told me there'd be nights like this. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999.
Let me tell you how I connected with Lloyd Albright, whose story I've been reflecting on since I heard it, in the last half hour. Lloyd sounded tired, a little confused. Some people would listen to that story and they would say, gee, doesn't that sound like a cover story? Other people, that it just doesn't explain packing that kind of stuff up and driving all the way to Ohio, and he said he wasn't in, but either being near or in a cave. What we read in, you can go to my website, you can read the story for yourself. And normally, if they're going to write that kind of story, and I'm just speaking now as somebody in the media, they would have tagged the story with Lloyd said he had had some recent domestic difficulties or something of that sort. And nothing like that was there. Now, how did I find Lloyd tonight? Now, the answer to that is a man, Lloyd Albright. The answer is a man named Matt, who I think prefers not to have his last name known. We'll ask him. And he said he sent frantic messages to my network, Art, I can conference you with Lloyd, and so he did, off air. And I said, Lloyd, look, I've got to confirm this is you. Would you give me your home number, please, so I can call you directly? And he did. And it jived with a search engine phone number for a Lloyd Albright in Satellite Beach, Florida. And so, based on that, I conclude a very high probability that we did hear from the real Lloyd Albright. Now I've got Matt on the line, who talked to Lloyd Albright for about an hour before we talked to Lloyd on the air. And here is Matt. Matt, are you there?
I'm here.
Do you not wish to give your last name?
No.
You don't want to get involved like that?
No.
Okay, I'm bringing Richard Hoagland up.
Cool.
At the same time. Matt, you conferenced a call between myself and Lloyd, correct?
Correct. I just want to get it out there that I was just really interested in the story. I thought I have some resources that I could take advantage of to find out who this person was and if it was true, and upon contacting him, I was thoroughly convinced it was him. I just asked him, is it true, Lloyd, and he proceeded to explain the story on what really happened.
Now, it doesn't jive very much at all with what we read in the newspaper.
Well, as a matter of fact, Art, you're actually incorrect. And I can't remember if there's two stories posted up on your website now, and one of them does actually mention marital problems.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Which one is that? Do you know?
I believe it was the second one, and I'll go back to it.
When was it filed? Because in this kind of a situation, you want to go to the earliest source before people have a chance to have a change of heart,
yeah,
and need to change their,
yeah,
story.
Yeah, yeah.
I am reading from the sheriff's deposition, his actual quotes,
right,
in the original story. He said he found the car from a call on Sunday. All right? This was filed 8/13/99, so he got the first call Sunday. He got the second call on Tuesday about a vehicle with master description parked on a township road in the area of the park. When deputies arrived on the scene, they found the vehicle packed full of the supplies, could not locate the driver. Smith, he's the sheriff, had the vehicle transported to the Noble County Jail and began a search. Quoting, he says, we got to thinking that possibly something had happened to the driver. We went out to search the area and tracked a person through a field and wooded areas. We then found rope that led down embankments and ravines. When we got to the bottom of the second ravine, we found him in a cave. He was trying to boil eggs. It was real smoky. In fact, some of the deputies didn't like it in his cave.
Yeah, that's what we've heard. Now, Richard, let me add, we've now got a second story link on our page. This one is to the Associated Press article, Caldwell, and it does not, it's the second story on my website. It does not mention marital difficulties. I just now read it. It's up there right now, the AP story.
So,
it just strikes me as strange, Matt. Now, you talked to Lloyd for an hour.
For over an hour.
And it strikes me as strange that these news reporting agencies wouldn't include that so that everybody would understand the story. Because otherwise, a NASA contractor, subcontractor, whatever he is, computer guy, all of a sudden seems to, for no reason that we can discern other than what he just told us on the phone, goes to Ohio to a cave with a bunch of guns and food and all the rest of it, is, you must admit, a little strange, and his explanation on the air sounded
disjointed?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, a little. So, Matt, what did you hear in that hour that we didn't get?
I asked him to explain what he was doing, and he sounded very upset. He's actually... he's probably not listening, so I don't think he'll care, but he's going for a psychiatric evaluation tomorrow. Let me tell you the story about where the comet story, how he explained it to me, originated. He had been apparently speaking with someone at work, and they had mentioned the possibility of a meteor or comet coming to Earth.
At work at NASA.
Right. And
this is interesting.
Right. Well, his interest... he, in whatever state of mind he is in it now or at the time, he had apparently been corresponding with a woman in Ohio via the internet.
Yeah, he said that.
And they came to the conclusion via remote viewing that a meteor was going to strike and that it was his best interest to flee to Ohio.
Okay, so in other words, he took something he heard at work, combined it with something that he came up with in a conversation and more with this lady,
right, and
over the internet,
and he misinterpreted the stress from his divorce and reprojected that into this feelings of the meteor striking.
Okay, and that's what you got during that hour.
Well, I've got a lot more information, but I can go over what I have it all written down, so I can go through what I've written.
Well,
down.
If you want to hit the high critical points, go ahead.
So okay, well, he wanted me to stress to you that he really didn't feel at the. He steps back and he looks back and he doesn't feel that he doesn't feel that there was going to be a meteor strike on Earth. He just said he was having marital problems and freaking out.
Right.
He wanted to discredit. A part of his hysteria actually came from the MelenGroup.com website, which I have just been made aware of tonight. And I don't know if Mr. Hoagland has any association with that website or not.
All right. So he claims he saw this. But wait a minute now. We're getting a couple of stories here. One, the Millennium Group is one thing. Hearing it from somebody at work, in his case, work being NASA, is something else again.
A cumulative. He got very upset over the fact that, he tried to explain it to you when he was on, about how plutonium in fusion, when in fact plutonium cannot fuse.
Wait. What does that have to do with the comet?
Yeah.
Well,
that's the Cassini story.
That's why I think he's kind of gone off the edge. I don't think any of this information. I think it's hysteria, and he's not associated.
Matt, let me stop you there. The sheriff, who we've talked to, let this man go to drive through four states with a car loaded with enough ammunition and weapons to blow half of Ohio away.
Right.
If he thought he was an unstable individual, he would not have done that.
Yeah, this is really a weird story, Matt. You've got to agree that that sounds a little odd for a sheriff to just...
To let him go.
Unless, Art, he got a call from NASA.
Yeah.
Because I've been in situations where I've been...
Well, let me
May I finish, please?
Go ahead.
In my early years when I didn't understand the levels of NASA that exist, I was in California and I was driving some folks to a dinner party and they were all hippies and it turned out that they had some pretty incriminating things in their luggage because they were going to South America or they were from, I forget exactly the details, but...
Do do the wild thing at 775-727-1295.
And what I did, because I was late and I was mad at the way these guys were doing various things, including searching without probable cause just because of the way we looked, I pulled out my NASA credentials. Well, you would have thought that I had pulled out Secret Service credentials. Suddenly these guys are on the radio. These are state police from California. They're on the radio and they walk back and they say very respectfully, "Oh, Mr. Hoagland, we're so sorry to have detained you," and they wished us well and I didn't even get a ticket. And I realized in later years that the NASA cachet was much more important than I thought at the time.
Well, that may be, and a call could have gone, who
so
the hell knows?
So suddenly the sheriff lets this guy go.
Yeah, really, I know, it's really strange. Matt?
Yep.
Matt, go ahead and add whatever else you want to add now, please.
Well, I think it all adds up to his hysteria, but I think he has some really interesting points regarding the Cassini and I honestly don't know how they all relate, but
well, it's a moot point now. Cassini has already passed the closest point to Earth.
Well, I think that was part of his hysteria, and maybe the sheriff's in his hysteria, he explained meteor, and that actually meant Cassini.
Wait
a minute.
No.
That's my assumption.
Is, according to Smith, Albright said he was hiding in the cave.
Yeah.
In the cave. To avoid meteor showers,
yep.
Which he said will hit the Atlantic,
yep.
Causing a 200-foot tidal wave, which is accurate if this were to happen.
Right. It has
wrecking
no,
havoc on the East Coast and
right.
Florida.
That is what's in the story, Matt, and that has no relationship to Cassini and the possible reentry
problem. It may not, but let me give you the points that he talked about Cassini, if I may.
All right,
okay?
Briefly,
yeah, but it's off track.
Okay.
And it's also a conversation.
Is this because you're related to the website or not?
All right. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, he claims that...
Richard knows, to answer your question, knows Mike Barra, who has the website.
Okay, so...
Or no, that's not true either.
No,
I'm
no,
sorry.
No, no.
The Millennium Group knows Mike Barra, who knows Richard Hoagland, who has the website.
So he won't be offended by my disclosure of whatever, if this is true or not. Basically, 2 days ago, the Millennium Group website, according to him, and I've never been to the website before, was the front end to a psychic 900 type of group where you pay. So he was very distraught over the fact that in this Cassini question, the paper, that information in that document has changed within the past 2 days, and he has proof of that, whatever that may be. So this all comes back to, I think, that this man is extremely hysterical, mm-hmm. distraught over his divorce, and in the conversation I have with him, I'm thoroughly convinced that we have nothing to worry about.
All right, Matt.
Let me raise one more question, Matt.
Sure.
Here's a guy who's from out of state. He's picked up by the local, you know, gendarmes in a state park. He's arrested, put in jail. Have you ever been arrested, Matt?
No.
Okay. One of the first things you do when you're arrested is you try to appeal to the local people's sense of community in that if you know someone in the community, you want them to vouch for you.
Right.
Which means if he knew this woman in Ohio, and that was why he went there, why didn't he tell the sheriff, "I know so-and-so, she'll tell you who I am," etc.? It never appeared.
All right, listen, I don't think there's an answer to that question. Matt, I want to thank you for coming on.
Hey, no problems.
And giving us your perspective.
Hey, no problems. I appreciate it.
Take care. All right. I think people are going to have to sit out there and decide for themselves what Mr. Albright said here on the air, how they feel about what he said, and what Matt just said, and what you're saying. This is one weird damn story. That's all
right,
I can say.
What I'm saying is look for consistency. When a witness begins to change his story and try to downplay all the most interesting aspects, including his physical removal 4 states away, And a separation from his wife and his son and family.
Well, that would stress anybody.
Something is...
If it's true.
His motive... No, I'm talking about he physically left them.
Yeah, if
you care about somebody, you don't leave them.
Yeah. Again, going to the story, the part that I have a problem with is exactly what you said, and that is that a sheriff, on finding somebody with a massive cache of guns and ammo and so forth and so on, would just... turn somebody loose under those conditions,
yep.
I find them so credible, so articulate, so mentally fit.
When they have demonstrated behavior that's outside the normal curve.
That is, yeah, clearly outside the norm. I surely agree with you. There would have been, you would think there would have been some sort of check and some sort of reference in the news article. All of this
doesn't feel right.
No, it doesn't. And in no way do I believe that when you read the story, you can convert this to Cassini in any manner. Now, I have no idea what the reference to the Millennium Group website, particularly in the last couple of days, would be.
Well, that
would not bear on what happened to him when it happened.
No, exactly. When I was
searching
for what we were doing tonight, I went over to the Millennium website, and I read through several of the stories, including the Cassini story, which has nothing to do with psychics and nothing to do with a comet.
Yeah, I know.
It's purely on the Cassini and the plutonium problem and the public policy question of 72 pounds of plutonium, you know, the thing we've talked about before. In no way, shape, or form is that a reason other than there are folks at NASA who are pissed at a whole bunch of us who are raising questions about the agency, and it's almost like the most visible trigger they could use for this poor guy was to have him go on a tirade against the Cassini people and divert the issue, divert the question.
But certainly, no matter how he felt about Cassini way back, that doesn't have a damn thing to do
It's called change the conversation. Marriage problems, Cassini, anything but what he told the sheriff.
Hold on, Richard. We are at the bottom of the hour. And I have no idea what to make of all this. And you all are hearing it as I am hearing it and can make of it what you will. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999. Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999.
All right, and I've got a correction to make. There is a one line, rather obscure reference, not in the Associated Press article that we've got on my website, but in the Dispatch, I believe it's the Dispatch story. It says, referring to Mr. Albright, he wanted his family to come along, Smith, the sheriff said. But they didn't want to leave Florida. He also said he had been under marital stress, Smith said. So that's in the first article that Keith found from the Columbus Dispatch. Again, the Columbus Dispatch. But in the Associated Press article, no reference whatsoever to that. So I'll tell you, folks, this is strange radio. As it happens, you're hearing it. And you can make up your mind about what you're hearing as we all can together. None of this, I assure you, none of this was planned. Astronomers admitted this week that they are unable to explain a strange phenomenon which appeared in the sky just before and just after last week's total eclipse. Long dark streaks across sky baffled watchers, including people on the Channel Island of Alderney. BBC Radio Guernsey was inundated with calls yesterday morning from those who had witnessed that. One caller said she had taken a video recording, but when she watched the tape later, the streaks had vanished. Listen to this. Professor Mark Bailey, director of the, that's ARMAGH, Observatory in Northern Ireland, said, quote, "I haven't seen anything in the literature that could explain it," end quote. Professor Lyndon Bell witnessed the spectacle some 20 minutes before totality and saw another band, which stretched two-thirds of the way across the sky after totality. Professor Phil Charles of Oxford University said, quote, "I was taking wide-angle pictures, looking with my 17-millimeter lens, and saw this dark band that went across a large fraction of the sky." So, load that one into the rest of everything, Richard.
Well, I was, as you know, coordinator at CBS during the eclipse in 1970. And there is a phenomenon called shadow bands, which are typically seen on the ground just before totality, racing along at the shadow's speed, which is, you know, approaching 1,000 miles an hour, depending upon the relative motion of the Earth and the Moon and all that.
Right.
But nothing like this in the atmosphere, in the sky, because, you know, all these people are pretty expert and have been looking around a long time, this phenomenon.
Right.
And I haven't a clue as to what they were seeing.
Right.
I would like to know why it was not visible on the video.
I want to know a whole lot of things. This has been one really weird radio night.
Let me go back to Mr. Albright for a second.
Yeah, back to Mr. Albright.
All right. Because I want to focus on November. If the data we're seeing on the video and the orbit plots we're doing and all that, which is on the web, just look for the headline on the Enterprise website, "Something Wicked This Way Comes."
Right.
Click on that and you'll find the complete story as of a couple hours ago. Parenthetically, I think one of the things that was interesting about Albright is he really seemed to take out after the Millennium Group and to want to change the subject into the Cassini thing. To move the conversation away from the comet thing.
I know.
Because we had not posted anything as of, you know, until late this morning.
No, I'm with you, my friend. And then when you look at the Dispatch story and the Associated Press story, they're 180 degrees from any of that. Because if he had said any of that to them, those stories would have been written in a very, very different way.
Oh, yeah, tongue in cheek, poor guy, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, if they'd have gotten into the psychic part of it and all the rest of it, it
would
have been a whole...
him alive.
Damnedest thing.
All right, let's go back. We've learned one new important piece of data tonight, and we have to thank Matt. Because Matt with the hour and not, you know, the glare publicity and not being Art Bell and in front of 20 million people and all that, got a really important new piece of data. And again, I look for the consistencies of the story. The witness is changing his story.
And the interesting part was NASA.
You asked him specifically, did you get this from inside NASA somewhere?
That's right.
And he said categorically, no, I got it from the Internet.
And Matt, on the other hand, said he had word from somebody at NASA, and he put that together with something else from this lady in Ohio.
What does it take to motivate someone to load up a car full of everything he got?
A lot.
Camping gear. I mean, that's not a trivial thing. You know, you can have marital difficulties, but you don't wind up moving states away and hunkering down in a cave.
Probably don't.
It's a disproportionate response, and we now know that he heard from somebody else at NASA.
Something. Yeah, I heard that.
This is what I've been looking for, because we've got NASA data that says there is something out there in the Encke orbit, and it's going to get here in November. Or we get to there. I mean, we actually cross the railroad tracks in November. Now, what can we do about it? I want to spend the rest of the program discussing options.
All right.
Because...
I know, actually, you had a lot of things you wanted to discuss that
tonight has been totally... You said it at the top of the hour, we were totally unplanned. I mean, I wanted to talk about Abydos and Egypt and Circle.
Would you talk about one thing for me just very quickly, or they'll string me up, Richard? You promised that you would have information on the Coral Castle.
I've been working on that, too.
And I've got so many faxes and emails here. Is there anything you can tell us more than you did before?
I spent a lot of time before I came back from Florida at Coral Castle. I have taken GPS equipment, not only equipment I borrowed from Robin Falkoff, but also equipment I borrowed from the really electronics genius that I know in Florida, who has state-of-the-art, you know, multiple systems. We had 4 or 5 sets running simultaneously.
Right.
We got the most bizarre readings in Coral Castle, and I need to talk to some experts, and I've been having trouble, you know, pinning down.
You mean bizarre GPS readings location-wise or altitude-wise?
Both.
Or what?
Both.
Both.
And varying within the castle.
Really?
And this is consistent with my model of hyperdimensional physics and what Lee Scanlon was doing when he moved the... But this is not something to trivially...
Did you take the same GPS equipment outside and at some distance from the castle to confirm the anomaly within?
You got it.
And it was normal?
Yep. And we're trying to confirm. I want to do another set of tests, and I need to wait for someone to get back literally from Cuba.
Cuba?
Yes, he's on a project in Cuba, and we'll be back in September. So after my appearances in the Bay Area in San Francisco, I'm going to be at 2 conferences in the Labor Day weekend in coming up in a couple weeks, and then a week later in Southern California in Los Angeles, I'll be speaking at 2 conferences for the first time in a long time, and the first time ever, you know, since this heart attack business. So I want to give them a plug because we're going to go into a lot more detail. Because we'll know a lot more by the time we get to there in terms of what we're talking about tonight, as well as the Egypt stuff I've been working on, as well as the Coral Castle stuff. And we are building toward a program where I can really substantiate some pretty interesting things. I want to do this right. You know me well enough, Art, to know I don't want to shoot from the hip. When I make certain statements, I have the data to back them up. Now, people may argue furiously about the data, but the data's there. The Coral Castle stuff is really interesting, and I don't want to do it wrong. I want to do it in the proper documentary way, so we will have to hold off on that, but I can tell you it's not trivial. If we're right about this, we have figured out what he did, why he did it, how he did it, and what it means for all the rest of us.
Whew.
It's neat. It really is neat.
All right. Abydos.
Yes.
Let's get that in before the top of the hour. Can we do that?
Not in any detail. I mean, what I've been working on quietly since the Lost Tombs piece on Fox is to counter these asinine, idiotic, accusations that I stole the glyph data from Abydos. And I have put together 5 pieces. I think they're all on the web tonight. If they're not, they will be finally up by tomorrow.
I think he said they were up.
They're all up. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a very long piece, and I spend a little bit of time knocking down these stupid accusations, because if there's one thing I do, and if you doubt it, just go to my book. Go to The Monuments of Mars. You will see citation after citation after citation of colleagues' work, other people's work, even people that I disagree with, people that for some reason disagree with me. I cite and oversight and cite again, and we've done it on your program ad nauseum. So I wanted to put the record straight about what happened with the glyphs, because I got into possession of these bizarre glyphs through an anonymous email, which is what the Internet is renowned for. People slip you things without any by your leave. Just, here it is.
Yeah.
And I initially dismissed them because they looked too good to be true. And it was only when I ran into a friend in Seattle who said that Greg Braden, who, of course, you know...
Of course.
...had been there, had seen them, and I know Greg, and he was showing slides of them, that I got interested enough to prompt Fox, like I used to do with my old alma mater, CBS...
Sure.
...to go all the way down. I mean, getting to Abydos is non-trivial in Egypt.
Right, that's right.
Including now because of the major massacre, the Japanese tourist massacre a couple of years ago, the Egyptian government is anathema to let people, particularly people with prominent TV networks, wander around without security. So there was a huge backstory about guards and AK-47s and licenses, and I mean, this was moving Mohammed and the mount with basically email and a phone to get the Fox Network and my dear friend Deborah Gussin to, in the middle of her other duties, take off 300 miles south of Giza and go and get video and confirm that these things are there. Well, then, as I'm recuperating from the heart attack, I had time in the internet to really dig into all the stuff I wanted to do before the show, before she got ill as well.
Right.
And I lay this all out in five parts, and what I have discovered is that it's Abydos, not Giza, which I think is the Rosetta Stone to cracking the problem of what Egypt really means in terms of a potential terrestrial connection to Mars, as well as to this proposed era that I talked about vis-a-vis Zeptepi the first time, the previous high-tech epic, which Graham and I and John West and Robert Bivol and many others now believe existed on this planet circa 13,000 or so years ago.
Okay, Richard, so boiled down to its essence because of time.
The clues
for anybody out there who thinks that Richard thieved the Abydos material, his response is on the website, and if you have said or believe that, it is incumbent upon you to read this and to dispute it if you're able to. Otherwise, go read what the real story is on Richard's website.
You more than that, because what I didn't want to just do a he said, she said. I have gone beyond now and really shown that there is an extraordinary mystery at Abydos, temple.
Well, that's why I said it's incumbent on them to study the material.
Yep. There are huge clues to what happened and what might happen again that I believe a custodial group has known for some time. And part of the reason that I want to lay this out on the web and in the conference that I'm going to do in the Bay Area and the conference I'm going to do down in Southern California in the next couple of weeks is because we're approaching critical mass now. I believe we are close to figuring out why they have been hiding so much, why they lie and cheat and steal and make accusations and put people up to savage reputations and generally assault those of us who are asking penetrating questions, because they have a lot to hide. If we're right, there's a lot riding on this for everybody listening to our voices tonight. This isn't dry, dusty history.
What exactly? That's right. What exactly is that going to mean to us?
Cataclysm. It means we're living on borrowed time. These people believe, based on this database, going back to these ancient Egyptian legends and myths, that there was a high-tech, godlike epic when people did marvelous things, you know, flew and talked to each other across distance and all that. That's high technology.
Yes.
We've got in the temple that Seti built, Seti the First built, there at Abydos, actual visual proof. And one of the things that occurred to me is that when you're looking at this, the standard explanation for it, I found out in the Egyptological community, is that we're looking at what's something called a palimpsest, which is an overwritten stone, where they would inscribe hieroglyphs on a stone.
Yes.
Then the new guys would come along, and they would plaster over the stone and inscribe new hieroglyphs.
Uh-huh.
And then there'd be pieces of plaster falling out. So the standard response is, no, you're not seeing a helicopter. No, you're not seeing tanks. No, you're not seeing submarines. You're seeing bits and pieces of hieroglyphs.
Oh, what a bunch of crap. Look,
well,
Richard, even if you... I went with Zahi to an area that the public can't go to, adjacent to the pyramids, that cannot be seen from the pyramids, which is the burial site of those who built the pyramids.
Right.
And I saw glyphs in there that clearly, Richard, without ever having been tampered with, they were obviously there for all this time they've been there. They were exceptionally clear. Exceptionally clear. And they showed things that... there is no contemporary explanation for, you know, if you believe, and I do, that the glyphs were done at that time. There's no way.
The two important sites are Giza and Abydos.
Yep.
Abydos is an unsung, extraordinary place. So what we need is time some night to go into the detail.
Obviously.
And for those people who want to come to the Bay Area, I'm going to be there the weekend of the, it's called the UFO Conference or UFO Gala. It's put on by a gal named Victoria Jack. There's a contact phone number, which is 408-723-1076.
That's you better 408 do that again.
408-723-1076.
1076.
And I'm going to give two workshops, to, you know, with several hours each one to go through the slides and the video and the other stuff and track what's going on. Then a week later, on the 18th and 19th, actually 2 weeks, I'll be in Los Angeles at the Expo for the New Millennium. It's called Awareness 2000, put on by Tim Gunn. And a whole bunch of other people are going to be there. David Icke and Brian O'Leary and Robert and Sherry Steiger and Robert Morning Sky and a whole bunch of Robert Goswolf will be there. Anyway, the number for that one is 310-479-2722.
Okay.
310-479-2722. And I'll be giving one long workshop, and I guess we're having some kind of breakfast where a whole bunch of us are discussing some of these things. Obviously, I'm going to be talking about, you know, this new Anki material and Albright and whatever data we accumulate between now and then. And hopefully we'll get some videos and some images in, and we'll be able to confirm with a variety of different imaging techniques that these objects really existed right next to the sun during the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
On the Anki path and what that can mean.
Are you going to, between now and that time, do some communicating with Charlie Plyler?
Yes, absolutely.
I would think that might be appropriate.
What I want to do is to try to correlate some of his ELF data, or ULF data, ultra-low frequency, with the motions of this thing the Millennium Group has been seeing on the SOHO data.
Yeah.
If I'm right, if we're looking at vehicles trying to capture our attention, meaning they're out there. There's some, you know, this is like prime directive stuff. It's like, pay attention, guys. Something big is about to come down.
Uh-huh.
Figure it out and do something. But they're not going to intervene. You know, the way I'm looking at this now is we've got somebody out there. I don't know who they are. I don't know where they're from. All we're looking at is real physical evidence on NASA videos. Remember those NASA videos?
Oh, yes.
As well as this SOHO data, which is really peculiar. And then we've got Charlie's data, which is electromagnetic, and is the kind of thing that would be a signature of massive electrogravitic engines operating in the very low-frequency regime.
Mm-hmm. And we've got astronomers seeing things they can't explain. We've got astronomers who looked at the eclipse who are saying they cannot explain what they saw.
I have no idea what
that
means.
We've got the Turkish stuff. I don't know what any of it means, but it seems so damned synchronistic. This has been one wild night of radio, let me tell you. What I'd like to do, Richard, when we come back, and we're breaking right now, is get a couple more things in and then take some calls and get some audience reaction to all of this. I want to know what they think about all this.
I want to hit very heavy, because it's necessary. If we're right, you know, this is pretty serious. I want to hit what we can do about this.
All right, good. We'll get to that. In fact, we'll do that next, and then calls. We'll be back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 18th, 1999.
Oh, lately my hobby has been going and finding the music of my youth. So I've been doing that. Remember this one? A long, long time ago. It was one of my favorites. We're going to find out what can be done to possibly avoid all of this, that which we've been talking about tonight in this I'm going to be digesting the show for a long time. Here's a fax from Lauren in Palm Springs, California, that we've got to address. Art Bell, you have a good program, and Richard is one of my favorites, but, as sometimes happens, neither of you listened to what the man in Florida said. He told you he was agitated by his marital problems, and when he and the woman in Ohio were remote viewing, they allowed this to interfere, and he picked up the meteorite aspect by error. Lauren in Palm Springs. No, Lauren, you're wrong. I clearly heard that. I very clearly heard that, Lauren. My reaction to it was a hesitant reaction, Lauren, because I'm comparing this, Lauren, to what I read of what the sheriff said, as Richard has been discussing for some time now, and something just doesn't quite add up. Now, it may be exactly what he said, but then why would that sheriff have let him go in those conditions? No, Lauren, I heard it, and I believe Richard heard it too. It's just that I think we felt odd about what we heard. Is that fair to say, Richard?
Yeah, it's the standard problem of the witness changing his story, putting a different spin when he's been, quote, found out or caught.
Well, he's obviously been back in Florida and back at NASA, he says, yeah, at work. He said that. And
now, if he was telling us the truth, why didn't he, when you asked the question, tell us the same data that he told Matt,
which was he
had heard this data from a NASA source?
I don't know.
See, this is part of the consistency.
No, I have no idea. Richard, what can we do? What you believe is coming, and I know from what you have amassed all of this, what can be done to prevent what you think is going to happen?
Well, by an interesting coincidence, on this Labor Day weekend, when I'm over in the Bay Area at this UFO Expo, one of the other guests who's going to be presenting is Stephen Greer. I was going to ask you earlier tonight if you wanted to get somebody else out of bed to get him on to talk about this, because Stephen Greer has some data.
It's interesting. I just got an email from Dr. Greer today.
Okay. Well, Stephen and I have been working on this problem very quietly for a year.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'm not telling tales out of school because I'm not going to reveal sources, but I will categorically tell you that Stephen has talked to people in the Pentagon who have confirmed over the last year that something is coming, and they don't think there's a damn thing they can do about it. Now, you need to get Stephen on the record to press him as to who has told
him. Did he know you were going to say this?
No, because, look, this is serious, folks. It's time for all the fun and games to stop. It's time for everybody to climb down off their whatever and finally put it all on the table, because we're confronted with a situation serious enough to motivate a NASA guy to leave Florida,
yeah.
Go hide in a cave.
Yeah, okay, but coming back, let's come back now to this data point. You're telling me
Stephen and I have
that Dr. Stephen
the guy
Gere,
who briefed the head of the CIA and has been over the Defense Intelligence Agency and has been palling around with the Clinton folks.
Head of CSETI, he's a physician emergency room physician.
Not far from Charlie Plyler, as a matter of fact.
And you're telling me that he's told you he's got Pentagon sources saying something big is coming?
Yes. Now, they don't think they can do anything, so that's why they're not telling us. What I'm trying to amass is a paper trail.
Richard,
is a paper trail, because I know we can do something about this. Remember what Ed Mitchell said months and months ago, that in the beginning, you know, stemming from Roswell, this stuff got privatized. And what we now have is a bunch of private groups sitting on critical technology that is not part of the common government, not part of the, you know, the open constitutional guys we think we elect and appoint. That there's this sub-level government which is running other things, the important things. And, you know, Greer has briefed the head of the CIA on things. This guy should know that, right? Jim Woolsey.
But don't you sit here, as I do, even your discussions with Dr. Greer and tonight's calls and all that, notwithstanding, don't you sit here and wonder, at least in some part, Richard, whether we're being fed gigantic amounts of disinformation?
I've got the video, see? I've been waiting for the actual evidence. And let me tell you why this is such a critical breakpoint. Remember I talked on the last show that we were coming up to a breakpoint?
Yes, oh yes.
All right. We've got visual evidence on the web. In fact, apparently, Keisha found a link over to CNN to the video, which you can download and play around with Photoshop and just increase the contrast. And these little objects should be there.
Here I go.
All right. They're sitting on the Encke path, on the Encke line, on that orbit trajectory. The train model says we meet in November. I've been waiting for that specific hard data. Now, NASA can erase all the QuickTime movies it wants. There were tens of thousands of people in England alone taking video and every other kind of optical, you know, recording, you know, record of this stuff, as well as all across Europe. Remember Gypsy Graves?
Yes.
She went to Iran. She had very good photographic equipment. She was going to lie down on the ground for me and take good long stills of the sky around the sun. So I've got two sources. One in England went to England. One gypsy went to Iran. So in a few days, I will have our own data back here to analyze. There's no way that NASA can hush up if there's real objects orbiting in the Encke flight path that we're going to meet in November. That's the real break that we're discussing tonight. Albright is an interesting adjunct. That's the social soap opera. Here's a guy who we now know from Matt heard from NASA sources that something nasty was going to happen, and he got motivated enough to move four states away.
Yeah.
You got to look at this. Now, what's the good news? What can we do? If the government we elect doesn't know it's got the technology to handle this, that they think they're stuck with rockets and stuff like that,
yes,
the government we don't know, whether it's been back-engineered from Roswell, which I kind of doubt, but I think it actually developed from the 20s and 30s when people like Townsend Brown and others were looking and experimenting with electrogravitic technology under the Navy contract.
Yes, yes.
I think the technology has now matured across 30, 40, 50 years, and that we've got operational, hyperdimensional electrogravitic vehicles, some of which show up on schedule to be photographed by the NASA shuttle for whatever reason. It's kind of looking at tests in Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do is to motivate, and everybody listening to my voice should want to motivate those in black ops guys who control that technology to go out and move this stuff out of the way. It's that simple.
Right. All right. Well, hopefully all we can do is pray that they are doing that. And if they really knew it was happening, I can't imagine they wouldn't be if they had the ability to do something
about
it.
Well, but I have sources, and if we have the time, I would go into very specifics as to the high-level political people I've talked to over the years who were told not to do anything when this showed up. And I've never told that story. And I want to give it enough time so I can lay in the documentation, because when I do that, people will see how serious this is and what we need to do to motivate people to make the call. We've got to get these folks to use this technology to change this situation. And I have been banking on that when we got the critical piece of data, which is visual evidence, that enough people in your audience, which are very motivated, remember, they saved the damn circle in Miami, right?
Right.
We got the pictures of Mars, right?
Right.
Well, there's a little bit of a bigger motivator here, because I don't think it's practical for all of us to move to Ohio.
While you're on that, this is so difficult to assimilate all of this, Richard.
But it's really not art.
Yeah, well, I understand. It's
very linear.
Here's Ken, who faxes the following about Mr. Albright. He says, Art, please note that if that guy was having marriage troubles and has guns, the story says 16, by the way,
mm-hmm.
Do you really think the police would just let him keep the guns? Hell no. I was once in law enforcement, and Mr. Albright's guns would have been taken so he couldn't harm his wife. So if he actually did make a statement about marital difficulties with 16 guns in the car, they're not going to point the guy back at Florida. And you know, that, boy, what a puzzling night, Richard.
Remember, we're post-Atlanta, you know, the wacko in Atlanta who killed all those people.
Yeah.
We're post-Littleton. We're post the guy in Alabama. Any logical, responsible law enforcement guy is not going to let a wacko go who's hiding in a cave.
You wouldn't, unless
there's something we're not knowing,
not,
which is...
Not if he made a statement about marital difficulties.
Even if he didn't, right.
But, I mean, when you add that element to it, then this faxer sounds correct. I mean, why would the law, sir... No.
Well, one of the things you might want to do is to give the sheriff a call. and ask him the question, why did you let him go?
Well, I'm willing to wake up a lot of people in the middle of the night, Richard, but I'm not willing
to
wake up the
sheriff. Well, I'm talking about tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow.
No, I'm serious. We should not let this go. We should pursue this because it's really kind of serious.
Well, it's absolutely puzzling. That's for sure. All right, well, look, I really would like to get a little bit of audience reaction.
Let's go for it.
All right, let's go for it. Good. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Art Bell and Richard C. Hoagland. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm in Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, all right. Interesting night, huh?
It sure is. I tell you, and I've got to be up at 8 in the morning, but I couldn't go to bed.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. This is fascinating. So I do have some comments on what went on tonight.
Please.
Should I make them to you now?
Yes, go.
Yeah. Oh, I just think it's quite clear that from his conversation that he was throwing out some red herrings. It seemed like a last-ditch effort to sort of obfuscate the story.
Yeah, you feel as we do, apparently. I'm sure he's a nice man, but...
Yeah,
it doesn't jive what we've got from the newspapers, what the sheriff said, and what he just said to us. It just doesn't all work.
No, definitely not. I mean, I couldn't imagine what's gone on in the States in the last, few months, that any sheriff in their right mind who had someone detained who seemed that distraught or that confused, if that's what they thought, that they would let them walk.
Yeah.
With the guns.
Yeah, with the guns at that,
You know, and also, if the comet or whatever, the asteroid, was not his primary concern, why would he have all that survival stuff, you know?
No, we don't know.
None of that adds up. And to add one last wacky, I guess, you have lots of wacky callers, so occasionally.
Jump right in, sir.
I practice sort of a kinesiological measurement of truth. It's like a form of dousing, only
muscle
using
testing.
A more scientific technique.
It's muscle testing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I used it tonight during this whole conversation. I checked again and again and again, even using a second party. And I checked out you and Richard, and you both got a 10 out of 10 on truth.
Oh, yeah.
Thank
you. Of course, we're telling the truth.
But your caller, and I don't mean to cast aspersions, and, you know, people can think what they want of this, but his story rated a 1.
Well, look,
you know?
I do know, sir, I appreciate your observation, and I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
I feel for Mr. Albright. He is in an impossible situation.
One way or the other.
Yes.
You know, he's in a tough situation. No matter which way you look at it, if what he said is true, and that's the causative factor, really, you know, a divorce, a potential divorce, and real family difficulties, then that's horrible. It's terrible, and I'm sorry for him. If it's other than that, if it's wider than that, and he did tell Matt things he didn't tell us. I mean, he could have told us, Richard. Hey, look, I talked to somebody at NASA, one of my colleagues, and they told me something about a problem coming.
Yep. This was damage control. I think that's part of the price for him being back at work.
Yeah.
That's my speculation, admittedly, but he was not truthful with us in the sense of being consistent.
Well, he didn't. He sounded confused, Richard. Wild card line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Charlie out of Las Vegas.
Hello, Charlie.
And I don't think there's any question that this man, just listening to his voice, he was scared to death. I mean, he's just coming apart at the seams, just listening to him. Let me paint a scenario for you, because I think you guys have put all the pieces together. Number one, the triangular ships that have been spotted, you know, that you've seen yourself, these huge triangular...
Oh, yes.
I think it's... I've got to believe they are built by us. And, like...
I don't have to believe that. I give that a 50% probability.
Well, just hear me out.
Go ahead.
See what you think. These ships are designed to transport people from this planet. What's coming at us, which he said is, you know, the gentleman that's came up with a those anomalies where it claims there's a spaceship or an anti-gravity spaceship 4 million miles out.
Mm-hmm.
I think ships that leave from here will meet up with that mothership. And you're definitely right. A comet is on its way. When you put it all together, plus one other fact, you had Sylvia Brown on the other night, and she says that the year 2100, there's nothing after 2100.
That's what she said, yeah.
Yeah, if you put it all together, what you've got in, with these triangles and leading...
All right, but here's where I've got the problem with what you're saying, sir. The first part of it is fine with respect to your view on what you heard tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see how you then make the jump to the triangular ships and to people leaving Earth because the comet's on the way to meet with some mothership out there. I mean, that's a pretty big leap.
Let's just go with the Bible. This is where I was going to put the final tie-in. If you read in Revelations, although we don't know the day, the time, or the hour, but overnight, what they call, I think, the rapture, one day there's people here, the next day your neighbors are gone. After which starts the ungodly, the 7 years of tribulation, which a comet impact on this earth would create everything you're going to read in Revelation.
All right, sir. I appreciate the call. But the rapture, too, is a controversial thing, even among biblical scholars. And there are a lot of people who say you don't find the rapture in the Bible. That issue aside, some of what he said I buy, some I have a problem with. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell.
Good morning. This is Ben in El Paso.
Hi there.
Interesting show. One thing that I'd like to ask Richard, all this information that it's gathered, has he checked the correlation? Because I heard the program about the Aztec calendar and the Mayan calendar. Is there a correlation there as far as something coming? Or are we looking at two different things?
Well,
they're two different things. And in fact, that's what I was going to address when I planned to talk about Abydos and Egypt and what we figured out a little more in terms of the mythologies and how they relate to things in the Western Hemisphere. We'll do that another night, but there are two separate problems.
Two separate problems.
Yep. The time frame for that one is 2012, give or take.
But people argue about that, too. There are some who say the Aztec calendar just ended. Others add more years. It depends, apparently, on your calendar.
Well, that's a matter of numerical conversion. And it really is 2012. But this problem is November. We don't have a lot of time to get folks motivated to do what they can do. It'd be totally different if we didn't have the videos, the NASA stuff showing bizarre, wondrous things occurring upstairs.
Yeah.
That the guys behind the camera knew were going to happen. Art, you got to factor this in. This is like the camera guy in Ankara following his
Okay, let's say that the camera did capture something, Richard. In Ankara.
Yep.
That doesn't automatically mean that whatever was seen is on a trajectory that is likely to cause it to impact with Earth.
It's in the Enki trajectory. I'll bet dollars to Navy beans on that. The only question is it actually going to hit us, or will it be a close miss this time around? Remember, if it's in the Enki stream,
well, that's a pretty important question. All right, hold that thought, and we'll be right back. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time, Bell, continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Very strange night. I'll tell you, I've not seen anything like this in a while, and I've had a few, as you well know. But we'll get back to it in just a moment. T. Smith, sorry, Landon, said finding a Kennedy Space Center computer programmer in a cave awaiting the destruction of Earth by a meteor last week was within local norms. The encounter with Lloyd L. Albright, who fled Florida for the rural county 80 miles southeast of Columbus, didn't surprise Smith. He's seen plenty of unusual cases during his career. In this latest case, residents near Wolf Run Lake reported seeing an unfamiliar car parked in the area north of Caldwell off I-77. Quote, the vehicle was completely loaded down with stuff. There was room for only one person. There were 16 guns, rifles, shotguns, handguns of all makes, and ammunition to go with all of them. End quote, Smith said. He also found camping equipment and a large quantity of dried food, including 200 pounds of wheat. A NASA identification card found on the car's front seat belonged to Albright, a 47-year-old computer programmer from Satellite Beach, Florida. Now, remember the conversation with Mr. Albright as you hear what I'm reading you. The space agency confirmed Albright's employment, but said that he worked at the center as the employee of a NASA contractor. After hearing about the car and fearing Albright might have injured himself, Smith led deputies through trampled grass along a road and into heavy woods. A rope tied to a tree led down the embankment, and another rope led to an even steeper embankment. Listen carefully. Albright was at the end of the second rope in a cave that went into the rock about 20 feet. Quote, he was lying there trying to cook an egg over a fire, but not having much luck, said Smith. And, well, that's when Albright told Smith a giant meteor was to strike the Earth at 4 p.m. last Wednesday. Despite Albright's credentials, Smith did not believe him. Quote, he very sincerely thought there was a meteor that was going to come and hit the Atlantic Ocean and cause a tidal wave 200 feet high, Smith said. He was trying to hide from the meteor. It was going to go up the coast, take Florida for sure, and there'd be water all over Georgia. The peach trees were going to be covered up. The man took vacation from his forest trip and picked Ohio because he had visited once before, determined it would be high enough above sea level to avoid becoming beachfront property. He wanted his family to come along, Smith said, but they didn't want to leave Florida. He also said he had been under marital stress, Smith said. Albright was sleeping on a cot, drinking water that dripped through the cave roof, and keeping food cold in a pool of water. Smith arrested Albright under a charge of disorderly conduct. He was a danger to himself, the sheriff said, adding that he didn't file the paperwork. A night in the New County Jail and a meal gave Albright a new perspective on the future, said Smith. He released Albright, escorted him to nearby I-77, and pointed him toward Florida. Smith said he was real apologetic. He was real sorry for causing all the trouble. Albright, back at the Space Center where he works on space shuttle data processing, said he is thankful for Smith. Sheriff Smith, he said, did me a favor getting me out of there, he said yesterday, adding that he'd like to visit Ohio again with his family. Albright said the meteor strike from fragments of Comet Lee could occur any time within 9 years. According to NASA's official webpage, the closest Comet Lee will come to Earth is 77 million miles by the end of September. There, Richard, is the official story. Now, people can put that together with what they heard Mr. Albright say here on the air and come to their own conclusions.
I still want to know why the sheriff let this guy go.
Well, there's more. He said he was not in a cave, remember?
I know.
That's not what the story says here. Oh. Now, this is talking about what the sheriff observed, and indeed, not he was way in a cave, according to this.
Yeah.
So, Something
and prepared for a long stay.
Yeah, something is really, 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 really wrong here.
No, it was definite disinformation time tonight, and I can understand the poor guy's position, you know, but that, and the fact he didn't tell us that he got this idea from a NASA source, from a conversation,
which
is a specific thing that's the test of the model here.
No, I agree. It is interesting, and the audience is going to have to ponder what they think of this. Let's go back to the lines. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi. Turn your radio off, please. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, sir. Where are you?
Oh, this is Sasquatch here in Salem, Oregon.
Okay.
And you do sound different on the phone.
That's what everybody says, sir. Go right ahead, please.
Great show tonight. I want to say, Richard, you're keeping us on the edge of our seats here, making us wonder what we know and what we don't know. And
you and me both. Believe me, sir. You and me both.
Yeah. Okay, Art.
Yes.
By any chance, did you on the 11th? On Discovery Channel, see the film they had on, here we go, on the eclipse.
Sir, it wasn't film. It was every single country. Yes, I watched beginning when I got off the air at 3 a.m., and they covered the eclipse in every single country. And
Art, did you record any of that?
No.
Oh, damn.
And I'm sorry.
You could have done a snappy.
I know. NASA... I could have gone to the NASA channel, and I guess I could have recorded it there, too, because they had a Hercules up taking a video of it, and I probably should have recorded it, Richard. It's one of those things. I sat there with rapt attention with Ramona and watched it go across the world. First time caller line, you're on the air with Richard Hoagland and Art Bell. Hello?
Yes.
Turn your radio off.
Oh, I don't have my radio on. I'm listening via the Internet.
Okay, turn your computer off.
Yep.
There you go.
Okay. Yes, I'm from Ohio, actually in Zanesville, just right up road from Caldwell.
Oh?
And also, I work at the Crisis and Information Center, where I do many crisis calls and work with the law enforcement agencies all around.
Right.
And I can tell you that what you heard was par for the course. That is what we usually encounter here in Ohio. The reason why he would let him go, basically, is here in Ohio, we cannot keep somebody if...
Who really hasn't broken a law. I mean, it did say in here the sheriff arrested him based on the concept that he was a danger, he thought, to himself.
Right, initially. See, he's allowed to do that as initial. But see, what will happen is they'll give a call to us. And what we'll do is we'll go down and we'll do an evaluation. We may feel that, you know, he's eccentric.
Were you involved in this case?
No, I was not particularly involved.
Okay, here are the things that you might be able to help us out with that don't seem to jive exactly.
Mm-hmm.
He had, according to this article, I read it, all kinds of guns and all kinds of ammunition.
Not unusual for Ohio.
Well, maybe not.
No.
But this gentleman was from Florida.
And as long as he had proper permits for all this, by the way.
Understand.
Wait a minute. Would he have had proper permits?
Well, we don't
know if he did or not. The police wouldn't, the police would have confiscated at that point.
That's right. Plus, there's nothing in the article to indicate there was anything illegal about the guns that he had.
Right.
So after he said he had marital difficulties,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it be illogical to send him packing back to Florida with guns?
I cannot tell you how many times we will get stories like that. We wonder what is in the heads of sometimes law enforcement. Because we will have this happen where you hear this happening, for example, in the news where
a baby is left off, for example,
in a dumpster, and then they take it to the hospital. Once it's better, they bring it back to the mother. They put it back in that environment.
And you're going, what the hell?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. I have never heard of a baby being picked out of a dumpster and then given back to its natural mother.
This just happened recently, for example, in New York City.
Well, the people are crazy.
There's a big brouhaha about that. It was a woman who was a drug addict, and she had thrown a baby.
Oh, great. So that's even better.
Yeah, I mean, when you see situations like that, that's not unusual. Here, it is. I mean, we've had situations where, you know, women have run up to the police department, and the ex-husband or estranged husband has followed her right there to the station and killed her right there.
Yeah,
so,
I've heard of that.
That sort of thing happens.
No, I don't doubt you at all. But there's holes in this story, damn it. Some pretty big ones between what Matt was told with regard to another NASA employee. That's a non-trivial matter. And the fact that Mr. Albright himself said he was not in a cave, but the sheriff here in the story clearly says he was two ropes down inside a cave, 20 feet inside the rock. Now, that's not even close. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Inside the rock.
Mr. Bell, how are you, sir?
Okay.
Good. I'm sorry, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to listen to Mr. Albright's call, but what if NASA's trying to cover up something that, or the government, period, about this guy's fears, you know, and maybe he's got a fear about something, his fear is valid, but...
Well, that's what Richard is supposing could be the case, and I don't deny it could be the case. It also could just be a very sad case of a man brokenhearted over what he thought was about to be a divorce, doing something completely irrational.
Yeah, but gentlemen, you're missing the point here. We don't just have Albright. We have the data.
No, I know.
That's really the two pieces of evidence together are infinitely stronger than any one alone. Because we have data, and we have a NASA guy who acted on data, and now is acting funny. This is non-trivial.
Well, especially in the fact that the government is taking steps, you know, with a bunker being built on the White House lawn, that, you know, practically. And
well,
you know,
look, I will add this. I'll say this, Richard. Even though in my mind, I must tell you, I believe it could be just a man who was in crisis himself. I've got to say that, having said that, there's just a lot of it that doesn't add up in important ways.
You want to bet the farm on it?
No, I don't bet the farm on anything, Richard. I've been doing this too long.
What I'm saying is, in this case, let's err on the side of caution and push and probe and get more images and find out what's really out there.
If, Richard, if what you believe about Mr. Albright is true, then I believe we probably would have got exactly what we got tonight on the phone, and that is a man who sounded confused and intentionally wished to diffuse.
Well, tell everybody that he would not come on the air with me.
It's true. Actually, he didn't say it. Matt said, I should warn you ahead of time that he doesn't like Richard Hoagland.
How does he even know I exist? Remember, he went to a Millennium website. We're not connected to Millennium at all.
Well, you are not unknown in NASA, Richard.
Well, that means he's talking to other people in NASA, right?
Yep.
So he's given marching orders, go out and diffuse this story. For God's sake, don't let Hoagland talk to you and ask you questions. And he didn't.
He wasn't in condition to be asked questions, Richard, beyond what I asked.
I agree.
Or at least he, you know, seemingly, certainly was not. I wasn't about to press a man in that condition. God. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, good evening, Art. How are you doing this evening? Calling from Connecticut, listening to you on WPHT out of Philly.
Yes, sir. Pretty wild one, huh?
Sure is. And my name's Dave, by the way. And you keep me going while I'm doing an early morning paper route.
Yes, Dave.
A couple of things I want to talk about. Why is it that the media 30 years ago was so different in reporting this sort of thing as compared to now? It's not like nobody wants to touch anything like this. I mean, other than your show.
I know.
I haven't heard anything.
I know.
And it really scares me.
Wait, what I find interesting, and it's really interesting, sir, is that we have three different sources now. We've got the Jeffersonian, the Caldwell paper.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the Columbus Dispatch, which is a pretty good newspaper there in central Ohio. We've got the AP Wire. all of them are treating this person very respectfully.
Right.
Correct.
There's no giggle factor in this at all.
I agree with you.
It's almost, I mean, another scenario is this was a deliberate wake-up call for those that are going to pay attention and a deniability for those that don't want to follow this trail.
It seems like nobody wants to pay attention to this stuff anymore. 30 years ago, it was completely different. I think
well,
the political...
I disagree there, because Roswell died because people said, don't touch it. The government
right.
said, this
they
is
wanted
our story, and everybody went away.
And now people... to you, Richard. I'm sorry, I missed you. I enjoy listening to you on the show in the morning. You know, I think sometimes it might take people like you and Art maybe to really start hammering away and getting to some of the news media and just say, hey, there's something out there.
Well, let me make a suggestion, all right?
Okay.
In addition to us probing and pushing, we're going to be on this story, and I'm going to present new data when I do these conferences in September, and obviously I'm going to do more stuff here on Art. Why don't we all send a fax to Dan Golden?
That's a good idea.
Asking him what the hell is going on the NASA video, what are those objects, and see what cockamamie excuse they come up with. His fax number, remember that, guys,
yeah.
202-358-2810.
Give it again.
202-358-2810. And just combine the facts on the Enki question with the facts on the Mars question. Remember, next week on the 21st, the day of the rollover of GPS to the Y2K problem.
Yeah, a lot of GPSs are going to receivers
yep.
are going to stop working.
On that day, we get our next new picture of Cydonia, courtesy of Mike Malin.
Actually, Richard, I should add, to be absolutely accurate, there are some navigational uses for GPS that could threaten the people using them. They really need to be aware that there will be an error factor develop.
By the way, an interesting coincidence. You know what the rollover time is?
Wow.
19.5 years.
Wow.
Just thought you'd like to know.
I appreciate that, Richard. And caller, thank you.
Thank you, Art. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
How you doing?
Okay, sir. Yell at us. You're not loud.
Is that better?
That's better.
Okay. I was wondering if this guy really was convinced that the meteor was coming and whatnot, enough to leave and everything. Once he got turned loose the next day, if he truly believed this, I don't think he'd head back to Florida, would he? He sounded like he was a tired guy.
Well, his family was in Florida. His job is in Florida. It said he had taken vacation to go there. I don't know. I'm so...
Well, remember, he was told, or he put the pieces together himself, that the D-Day was August 11th. He was released on his own recognizance and sent back to Florida after the 11th, and obviously we're still here.
Right.
Yeah, but he also said that impact from Comet Lee fragments could come over the next 9 years.
Anytime over the next 9 years.
That's what he said.
Well, that more fits the Beta Taurid model, which is we pass through them twice a year, and like crossing a freeway against oncoming traffic, at
right.
some point you're going to get hit.
But still, if he had this data and he was convinced enough to leave, you reached him at his house, he's going to and from work, it doesn't seem like he would be there. He'd probably try to get his family together and whatnot. If he can't, then he would still leave.
It depends on what NASA told him when he got back.
Well, if they say...
That's a possibility. The other possibility is it's just a very sad situation.
Well, they could threaten him with his life, but if he believes, if he stays, he's going to die, and NASA's threatening him with his life, it's not much of a threat.
Well, let's assume that when he's this visible, you know, AP, UPI, whatever...
Mm.
Now you got to treat him differently, and what I would do if I was in their position, I'd say, okay, Lloyd, at the right time, you and your family are inside, you'll be safe.
Oh, and in other words, go out there and defuse this before...
Precisely.
Yeah, that's one way to look at all this, and the other is that it's a simple tragedy. So, Richard, boy, I'll tell you, brother, never, ever a boring program, never boring. Tonight was the wildest of them all.
It's going to get more interesting, Art, I hate to tell you.
It's the Chinese curse, for sure.
Well, we have something serious to deal with here, so let's both pursue it and then report back on what we find.
Okay, that's what we do here. Thank you, my friend. Good night. Sleep well.
And good night, America.
And sleep well, America. That's time. All right. Yeah, sleep well, folks. Tomorrow night, Gary North, who will also help you to sleep. That's what we do here. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Think about it all. Good night.